second question. Remember, this is because I see your visa writing. If your age just indicates, I will stop. I don't like to start first before you. But when you are ready, just indicate. Are you ready? Okay, I'm so good. Send you checkers. I might. We have those what we call the overcrowding that we have. But we have spent less, only 73% was spent on facilities. How can we justify this expenditure, low expenditure? That's my last one, Chair. There is also in the Auditor General's report, it's reported that the emphasis, when I look at it, was mostly around asset management. Do we have qualified people who are responsible for asset management? And I think that clearly across departments, the issue of asset management is a problem. But also I see here is a problem. Do we have qualified staff, and how do we intend to improve on this report? And this report, I think that the department was lucky, got the qualified. It could have got worse than that. Thank you. Thank you very much, Honorable Sokoni. Let me go tell this with Honorable Fielding. Honorable Mutseki will follow them in that order. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, I was beginning at the Western Cape expression in mind from the Oversight Visit last week. And what worries me? Every correctional service throughout the nine provinces is overcrowded. But at the same time, you've got run play correctional services where you've got 49 vacancies. Then you ask yourself the question. You're 113% overcrowded, the same center, you got a shortage of 49 staff members. That worries me. And then I will go back to at the same time I'd like to put the question about the farming run play. I saw the farm, and it's a very big farm, it's a nice farm, but the farm without a budget, a separate budget, or the budget is included by the national budget of that region. And I'd like to get the answer about that. And another question that Chairperson I'd like to put is, if we visit Paul Small, we hear from Paul Small staff that every person in directional service day by day, you spend 125 rand on every person. Why? Is there no contact, or why is there no plan in place throughout the JCS system to get rid of those people who are waiting for us for just 200 rand, 100 rand, 500 rand, and you spend over 6 months more than the Danish final century.
Thank you. That was Honorable Fielding for his reference. Honorable Fielding would have finished his question. I will now recognize Honorable Mutseki. When it's not up, Evan, it's not up. Okay. Honorable Mutseki, followed by Honorable Mayuti and Honorable. Is there any up on the left? Okay, we'll hear. I'll use the row.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, my point of departure will be to commend the department for having improved, because when you look at the report across, there is an improvement, even some of the comments that they are making. I think the department needs to be commended for that, because there's a light at the end of the tunnel, that some of the challenges, problems that have been there, there's a possibility of overcoming them. And for that, Chairperson, once again, the department must be commended. This is important, because if you don't do that, you leave this house with the impression that you come here And all that we do to you, to yourselves, is to say things that seems to be pointing to the weaknesses that are there, but not saying anything on the positive. So I think this is very important. Having said that, Chairperson, on the issues of the skills as part of the work that you are doing, you know, one question that we have continuously asked is, are these people that we are giving skills beyond the correctional service centers, are we able to monitor what are they doing? Are we able to assist them where we can, together with our partner outside, to be placed somewhere so they don't repeat what they went to the correctional service for? And if the skills that we are giving are actually assisting them to be better people. I think this is important, and I'm mindful that, Chairperson, you know, if the department was to be given a chance to ask questions to us, they will also say, well, maybe you must help us because you're working with these people. But I think it's important for the department, because I believe you have a lot of interest around this, just to monitor beyond the correctional service walls if they do that. That's one thing, Chairperson. I think the second issue, Chairperson, I'm happy that the higher excellent post, you seem to be doing very well in terms of filling. One will be interested in your micro management and your lower management, because those are your foot soldiers who are supposed to ensure that the work is done. You might have spoken to that, but maybe I did not see that. Just if you can just give us a picture around that, if you are winning there, because I believe, as I say, that's where your actual work is supposed to be done. And if you find that those two, you don't have enough foot soldiers there, then your work will be negatively affected. That's the second question, Chairperson. The next question that I want to ask is more of a cross-cutting question, because in fact, Mr. Ogoni has already spoken to the Auditor General's report, the specific that I wanted to. But just to check, because I see that you have a problem with the integration of your three systems, that's where your weakness comes from, where you highlighted that area. That is because Ogoni spoke about the qualified people, skilled people. Now I want you to specifically tell us what was, having identified this problem, what was the cause for the three systems not to stick to each other and ensure that proper work is done? What is the way forward? Are you working on that? Have you worked to ensure that this area is improved? I think those are the areas, Chairperson, but the other area is that of the assets, because it also cuts across in terms of your qualification. I know this problem is a challenge for many departments, Chairperson, the assets. Let me be very specific and speak like if I was serving in that organized committee. Have you got asset management? I mean, asset register, is it up to date? Is it well managed? In that disorganized committee, they will ask that question. But let me ask it from you specifically. Thank you very much.
That was Honorable Moseki. I'm now recognizing Honorable Mac.
Thank you, Chair. I have a few. Oh, I said I wouldn't ask any questions. I wanted to be out here early, but it doesn't seem like but I have a wide range of questions. I also love this department, Chairperson, as yourself. Maybe that's where the lots of questions come from. Let me be first very specifically. Loans made to beneficiaries. Can you? I can't find it. Can you give me any percentage of those that were irrecoverable, that were written off, more or less. The same with fruitless and wasteful expenditures. I see there's mention of them. I also agree with the control of assets, and I pick up that the documentation in respect of assets were not readily available, and that there's some problems with the alignment. Is this also due to capacity constraints, or is there anything, is there nothing in place to curb this? The same with the staff debt. How is it recovered? Is there nothing in place to get to recover these debts? And with the medical expenses, there's a few that is not managed properly and not updated. And maybe you could just give me some explanation on that. Then maybe all of this adds to control, monitoring the control system. If you have the control system, is there a way of monitoring them? Do you have the capacity? Do you have people? Is there a system of monitoring? Let me go a bit wider now, and I've asked this also yesterday. Disabled convicts, nowhere do I hear or see about these people. I don't hear how many are there. There might be a little, not a high percentage, but is there anything for them? I made an example of myself not being disabled, but having some impairment on my hands. For me to go into any cell will be a very dangerous thing. And I have to fight and defend my honor like hell. It will be big. Now, is there anything for a person like myself? And because I don't see these adjustments or anything in any cell for a disabled person for his own protection. Like ramps and these stuff. I don't see anything about it. I do see, and I must congratulate you, that I see the employment of disabled is picking up and is improving. So I'm very pleased with that. Then there's the old question. If there is a problem with capacity, and it's a problem that when we went around, we heard of the remuneration of your people, of your officers. The same thing. I don't pick it up anywhere. Are we a teacher or a nurse or anyone that works for TCS? Their salaries are much lower than other people outside. Isn't there anything that can be done about it? Isn't there any plan that can be put into place? How do we also assist with it? We've been speaking about it, but we've never come up with some concrete stuff how to address it. Because that might be also one of the reasons why you are losing staff. And this might not only be to teachers and to nurses, but also maybe to people with a capacity in the control system, in the area of controls and bookkeeping and all of this stuff. I'll wait for it. Thank you, Chair. I'll listen and wait for a second bite. If you come around.
Thank you. That was Honorable Mac. Can I recognize the Honorable Manuel?
Thank you, Chairperson. I don't know why Honorable Mac vowed not to ask any questions today, but has asked so many questions. I've got two questions here. One is for clarity. It's at page 4 with regard to 358 litigation, 89 claims, 154 arbitrations, 115 motion application. What exactly is the presenter referring to? What is the nature of these litigations and claims? Secondly, I see again on the same page that there is a reduction of escapes from correctional centers. But what I would like to find out about whether it is still the case that some of the escapes are facilitated by officers in the correctional system. Is that still the case? To what extent do they contribute, that is, those that facilitate escapes, to what extent do they contribute to these escapes? Thank you.
Can I call upon Honorable Nyanda?
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm going back to slide 4. Over 50% in unnaturally death, increasing violence on inmates by other inmates and by officials. And I just want to find out how many natural deaths has happened. And why is it like this? Do we still have these 26 and 28 that are killing each other? And my second question, it goes back to a certain instance, it's 80 instance assets captured at incorrect amount. Why? My other question again is that not all assets could be traced to their physically location. Not all assets were barcoded. What is the problem? These assets are not barcoded. We are short of manpower or whatever. Thank you, Chairperson.
Yeah, before I allow the department to respond, let me forgot one question on this. Thank you, Chairperson. That's really one question. Again, on the slide, other slide that was shown there of overcrowding, I see there's about over 2,000 kids that are there. And in different case, for instance, there's no youth development center, but there are 431 kids. That are there, maybe with their money. Where are they kept? That is one issue. But secondly, is that what age is, up to what age are children kept in custody? And perhaps,
thank you very much, Commissioner Peterson. I think you'll, as usual, unleash your detachment to respond to whatever question, but let me hand over to you to respond to this question.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Perhaps just in general to say that I find it quite strange that yourself and I think it was Mr. Mistakey, others alluding to how much you love this department. We're not fooled by that. it makes us a lot more alert when we get statements like that. Thank you, Mr. Maseki, especially for those words of encouragement. We do need it. It can really be, sometimes we do experience that we tend to focus on the negative. And when we talk about Auditor General's reports, when we talk to the AG about it, they tell us that auditing is essentially a negative approach to these things. And so it's not their job to report on the positive. So we tend to zoom in there. But thanks, it helps us to know that we should just move forward and work a bit harder. Chairperson, indeed there's a number of penetrating questions and I don't quite know how to approach it, but I would like to just warn the RCs that I would like them to respond to issues around HIV/AIDS and the sites within their region and also to give a sense of progress in terms of the accreditation of sites, and also the RC of the Western Cape to pick up on this Western Cape specific question. The RC Eastern Cape will deal with the issue of secure care, the children issues that was raised. But let me take a first bite at some of this, and my colleagues will also pick up and add where I've stopped. And perhaps I will pick up on themes, and it seems, let me start with some of the concerns that emanate from the report of the Auditor General and the various concerns that have been raised there. I think the first one is on asset management, that I should perhaps explain what the problem is, Chairperson, and what it is that you're doing about it. The problem, as you've read certainly in the AG report, clearly shows that it is multifaceted, ranging from us not having barcoded our assets to us not reconciling different parts of this, in fact, the older assets with what is on the system of the provisioning administration system, and what is on the web asset tool. It also relates to incorrect allocation of value to those assets. If I can just make a general comment and say that firstly, the Department of Correctional Services, for some strange reason, has been the only department that has not been allowed to migrate to LOGIS, which is a system used in government that allows the different type of systems to interface and reconcile. We've not been allowed to migrate to LOGIS, and I think the reason why may be related to the fact that the government is investigating a much more comprehensive system that would also interface with the basic accounting system. But as you know, these processes to develop new systems take a very long time. And the last time we engaged them, they indicated that it would probably take 5 years before they develop a new financial management system that integrates all these systems. And so they put us on hold. But since we've been getting regular qualifications, we've said to them, it's really not fair that we're getting these qualifications and the systems that Treasury is forcing us to use is not doing what we expect, what's expected of us. And therefore we urge them to allow us to migrate to LOGIS, as other departments they have agreed to allow us to finally do so. We have established a project team consisting of DCS officials and Treasury officials to manage the implementation and the migration to LOGIS. I must say that that's not going to be an easy process. It's going to be quite comprehensive, and it will take a period of longer than the financial year, beyond 2007-08 financial year, which means potentially we still have a problem with assets going forward into the new report of the Auditor General. The question is what in the fact of us migrating to LOGIS and the first take-up of the first 48 centres will start in February. We have said to our centres, we want you to use the quiet period in December and January just to fast track this to see if we can earlier achieve some of our targets. So the migration to LOGIS is the long-term solution, but in working with other departments, you also know that even with LOGIS, there's problems with regard to the management of assets. The second issue that I want to cover in relation to assets is perhaps to say that DCS is quite peculiar in the sense that we have lots of assets in DCS, given the nature of our work, and we have people in whose interest it is perhaps not for us to use the practices within government to barcode assets. You will probably see that some inmates walk around with lots of barcodes on their shirts and so on. The moment you put the barcode on, it disappears again. So we've had to find an alternative one. And so we started to use engraving as an alternative way of barcoding, and that process is starting. Where we have, we've also shown, and I'm sure the agents can report the extent to which we have managed to capture assets on our system. and we've made some significant progress in that regard. We have said to the Auditor General that this, since this is such a big problem, just to give you one idea, in order and also to answer the question of why we cannot reconcile between these different systems, firstly, the different systems use different bases to record the information of assets on there. The one system would, for example, record information on the basis of what the actual value is, the provisioning administration system. What is it that you purchase the system for, and therefore that determines the value. The other system requires that you give an indication of what the cost value, what is the cost of that item. And I think these are some of the fundamental reasons why it's difficult to reconcile the two. In DCS, you know, many of our assets are a lot older than 15 years, and to find the original invoices is extremely difficult, and the whole focus on assets management has been a fairly recent phenomenon. We can't find that primary documentation in some cases, and we have to therefore estimate a cost, which is not consistent with what the prescripts say we should do. What makes it even more difficult is the fact that in DCS we produce and manufacture a lot of assets ourselves, and so what value do you attach and where do you find the documentation? And then lastly, we're confronted with having to deal with assets because of its age that has really very little value. And so what we're saying to the Auditor General is, you know, we would like to focus on the current and kind of ring-fence the old so that we can really make progress going forward in terms of asset management. So our approach is quite multifaceted, Chairperson. It's trying to find practical ways to satisfy the AG in the interim until we fully migrate to Logos, which I'm saying is going to take another 2 years. And the approach there is that we may want to just focus on reconciliation and capturing of those assets that we need to group and ring-fence for various reasons. When we do confront the problem, and various members have raised the concerns around lack of staffing, yes, indeed, we do have large vacancy rates in the area of supply chain management where the people are located responsible for asset management. And that is further exacerbated by the fact that where you do have people, by the nature of DCS as a security institution, there is a tendency on the part of managers to, when people do not pitch up to do custodial work, to move these administrative staff, you know, to do custodial work, because for them that is a priority. Not recognizing the importance of allowing these other people who must specialize in supply chain management and financial management to allow them to do that very important work. We were saying we have to find ways of insisting that those people are left to do their administrative work because of the impact on our compliance and control system. So what we're doing is we're moving towards the system of the code of remuneration and the appointment of some staff within DCS in terms of the Public Service Act so that they can clearly see that their specialist function is to work administratively, to manage finance, to manage administration, to manage leave, and that way come to grips with the non-compliance and control requirements within DCS. So that's the one initiative, and we hope that will start in April next year. The other initiative around the issue of staffing, especially the staff that must specialize in the area of asset management. Chairperson, if we look at the vacancies of these people, you will find that they're in a much lower level. Yet, when we have to recruit people with some experience and understanding, or even anybody to do this work, we tend to advertise internally only. And so you have to compete for the same pool of people. Those people on the lower level that we want to attract are in other departments. But if you advertise in a fairly low level, there's not going to be much incentive for a person to come over from one department to another department. So we need to find a way of overcoming that. One way is, of course, to improve the levels on which these people are appointed. And we have done some work in that regard. We have had a project that we introduced not only for administrative purposes, but also other levels, where we said to Treasury, The challenge within DCS is the lack of supervisory and junior managers within our organization. We have too few of them. And Treasury supported us to implement a project that we call Project Realukisa. For those of you who don't know, it means let us fix it. And the whole idea with Project Realukisa is really to deploy supervisory staff and junior managers. For this year alone, Treasury has given us money to appoint up to 600 junior supervisory and junior staff. In the previous year, we have started with appointing junior and supervisory staff at centers of excellence and at the bigger correctional centers as well. So it's kind of a multi-pronged strategy around assets that we have implemented. I don't know, perhaps I should pause on asset management here to allow my colleagues, if they do want to add to it, to perhaps add. Otherwise, I can just introduce the issues around overcrowding, and then they can also share on that. Anyone would like to add to the asset management issues? If not, Chair, I would want to proceed with the questions raised around overcrowding. I think Mr. Sugoni asked quite a number of questions. the issue, and perhaps again my colleagues can focus on what happens regionally, but on a national level, first to say that the overcrowding that we're experiencing at DCS is largely as a result of us having unfortunately inherited by default responsibility for awaiting trial detainees. Historically, the awaiting trial detainees, because these people are still innocent. Historically, they were the responsibility of the Department of Justice, you know that, and the South African Police Services. Indeed, you will know that in excess of 40,000 awaiting trial detainees are in fact detained in police cells. So it's the police essentially that must hold these people until such time as their court cases are finalized, and only then are we supposed to be taking them into correctional facilities. Unfortunately, the problem has been with police not having the required capacity, and we've started to help them by taking over some of their people gradually, and now we're sitting with a problem as correctional services that we have even more ATDs than what is in police custody. And for a long time, you would notice in our white paper, we have not referred to the issue of awaiting trial detainees. We have referred it back to Cabinet and said, let the South African Police Services and the Department of Justice resolve this problem. Cabinet, really, in doing something very positive, said, listen, we're tired of this to-ing and fro-ing. DCS, you take charge of this. So, by default, we've now inherited overall responsibility for directing and coordinating the service delivery improvements within the area of management of awaiting trial detainees. Part of what that entails is, Chairperson, the establishment of an integrated justice committee around not only overcrowding but also the improvement in the remand detention system on the one hand, but also a focused approach and productization within DCS of the management of awaiting trial detainees. We've made some significant progress. Again, another multi-pronged approach when it comes to ATDs. One dimension of that is to develop protocols so that all the departments can understand their roles very clearly when it comes to phasing out and processing and improving issues such as access to justice for people in conflict with the law. In addition to the issue of protocols, we've said we need to manage those people who have been given bail in the first instance of less than 1,000 rand. But we know when courts decide to give people bail, Chairperson, the courts are really saying these people should be out there. They don't have to be in our facility. So we're saying even by starting on those who have received bail of 1,000 rand and less, it's still too limited. We have asked the JCPS, DGs and ministers for us to increase that threshold to 2,500 in order to try and get to a larger number of people. Chairperson, I'm sure we can share with you statistics on the successes that we have achieved in terms of people with bail under 1,000 rand and reducing those numbers. In fact, if you look at the awaiting trial detainees statistics, you will see that the figure remains fairly constant. And this is despite the successes and the increase of personnel of the police. So if the problem is not growing much bigger, then our efforts to keep the numbers down, we must be given some credit. Obviously, we are not eliminating those numbers entirely, because there are factors that the courts take into account when considering through Section 63A to release a person outside, or a person to await trial outside of prison. And very often our people cannot meet these conditions, such as having, an identifiable address, people, family members who will take responsibility, and so on and so on. What we are saying at DCS is that we need to seriously also explore the issue of electronic monitoring, so that becomes another option for us. But in terms of the management of awaiting trial, or the other dimensions of the project, the issues related to those with bail of less than 1,000 and extending that to 2,500, we've also said, let's look at the long term. We've done some research at DCS, and we've said within our own facilities, the largest number of awaiting trial detainees are essentially kept in about 8 facilities. We're looking at developing those facilities as dedicated centers for awaiting trial detainees, so that we can improve the circumstances, we can work better to ensure that their dignity and their rights are protected as innocent citizens. In the long run, part of our work in order to develop a new system is also to look at the building of new remand detention systems. In some countries, we've seen some examples of those dedicated remand detention centers. I don't want to go on and give you too much detail, because that could be an area for much more detailed discussion. But we're quite excited about the work that we're doing in that area. And as I said, on the one hand, it's coordinating the work of other departments, whilst at the same time improving our own efforts to advance the cause of awaiting trial detainees. The issues of children, I just want to say broadly again, we've now for the past 10 years, since 1996, when we amended our own act, and we also amended the Criminal Procedure Act, which allow for children temporarily to be held in correctional facilities, in order to give the Department of Social Development an opportunity to build sufficient numbers of secure care facilities. We've seen that the numbers have remained constant, that social development is perhaps not building these facilities fast enough on the one hand, but from our perspective, we've concluded, Chair, that no matter how many facilities social development builds, they will never, ever get up to the required standard because of the nature of the problem that we're trying to address. If you look at arrests that happen, it happens everywhere. And if you consider that those children must appear at court, you cannot arrest the child and then transport that child 200, 300 kilometers away from the court where the child must appear, or from where the family of that child is. So what I'm really saying, we as correctional services, given the number of facilities that we have a much more extensive network of services. And I'm beginning to say, perhaps we need to tackle or approach this thing differently. Perhaps the question that we should answer is, if these children are to be kept in our correctional facilities, under what conditions must they be kept? Can we have a dedicated facility, like a house, and make sure that the security around it is adequate, and have childcare workers instead of correctional officials? But the fact is that we have a much wider network, and we can begin to address this issue of distance and proximity to the parents. It's not a debate that I believe some of our sister departments are ready to engage with, because we have a mandate for these children not to be at correctional facilities. But I think we need to begin to look at this differently. But just to ask my colleagues to reflect on some of the provincial initiatives to manage the issues of overcrowding, I'd like them to come in at this point.
Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. Honorable Sogoni has also asked whether we participate in clusters and the different structures. And I wanted to address that specific issue to say that in our different regions, we participate in the different structures, including the development committee, where you find various stakeholders, including the NPA, magistrates, and various stakeholders. We participate in structures such as the joints. There are other structures. There's a newly formed structure which is being chaired by the judge president in the Eastern Cape, a structure which is specifically trying to look at how we can deal with the backlog of cases. Because as we were saying, our overcrowding is mainly due to awaiting trial detainees, people who are awaiting trial for unacceptable periods. And we have a dedicated program now where we are saying how can we deal with those cases and try and fast-track them in an effort to address overcrowding. Coming back to the issue of children, which I think Commissioner has covered extensively, it's also important to mention that in our particular case in the Eastern Cape, we do not have those secure care facilities which are supposed to be run and managed by social development. They have recently opened a facility in Queenstown, JJ Sefontaine, which was opened on the 5th of November. It will assist in a way, but it won't really make a dent in terms of the magnitude of the problem, because JJ Sefontaine on its own only has a capacity of 79. They can only accommodate 79 children. So the challenge remains, as Commissioner was saying. Currently, the sentenced youth, we try to decentralize them to Cradock and Mdanzani with an effort of giving them specific programs that are specifically designed to try and assist them as young people. But again, you would find them here and there depending on how far they come from, and also us not wanting to disrupt the participation of families also in rehabilitation. So that remains a challenge. Maybe if I'm allowed to cover another question that was raised by Honorable Musweki, so that I don't come back about the ex-offenders. Musweki, I'm sorry, I always make this mistake. I'm very sorry that.
Musweki
and Musweki, every time they're in the meeting, they fight over the same name. So I got used to that. Honorable Musweki, about the ex-offenders and whether we monitor the skills of people after release and so on. It's another difficult one to monitor, but we do try as much as possible to link them with the resources where possible. I can make an example of amongst many projects that have been started by ex-offenders. There is a factory in Timbaza that is mainly run by ex-offenders and is producing cleaning material. And also in our activities, we try to market this factory to say to people, you can go and buy your cleaning material from Timbaza at this and that place. So that also we try and assist to ensure that they do generate some income. We've got ex-offenders who bought some farms, and we are using the skills that we trained them while they were in our custody. But it still remains a challenge to ensure sustainable linkages with the business sector, but also building confidence of people to say that if you employ them, they are truly rehabilitated. Because people, that's the question that they ask. You say, I must employ them in my business. What's going to happen to my business? So it remains a challenge that I always say it's a community responsibility for all of us to say, let's make an effort to employ them. But not only in the private sector, in our offices as well, honorable members. It's a challenge to see some of them employed in your own offices and functioning there, because we're saying if they're good enough for the business sector, they're good enough for us as well as people in public offices. There was an issue that was raised about vacancies in the parole boards specifically, and what is it that we do to assist those areas. The figure that was given is a national figure. So you would find that in another region, maybe it's one, another region is four, another region is three, and so on. But we have an agreement with our parole boards that are there, that some of them can be roving boards, that they can visit other areas and try and assist and ensure that there's no backlog. But also in areas where maybe one management area is vast, you get two parole boards, for example, and fortunately you find that the other board is the post is filled, the other is vacant, that one would still assist in making sure we try and push. But again, it's important to mention that we do prioritize the filling of such posts. We had an unfortunate incident in our case where somebody went through the process and that person was appointed. When that person was to be appointed, we found that person in ourselves. So it's challenges of life that you meet with, that people do things and now we are back to square one. It will be like we are taking 2 years to fill a post that we had otherwise filled. There were issues of issues that were raised by Honorable Manyosi, asking about whether what are these cases, the specifics of cases that the department is litigated, and they would vary. There are cases where offenders would take the department to court because they believe that they are supposed to be outside. They believe that the parole board, whatever the parole board has said in terms of their stay in incarceration, is not acceptable to them. Therefore, they would challenge the department in court. There are cases where there are allegations of assaults of offenders by members. There are cases even when an offender is assaulted, an offender, that the offender would still feel that I was under the custody of the department, and therefore the department must guarantee my safety, and they would challenge. So the specifics of the cases can be provided, but they vary quite a lot in terms of what exactly they are about.
Colby, just to expand on that issue of litigation, just for the sake of completeness, before you proceed, Kadir.
Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members of the committee, thank you, Commissioner. As the Regional Commissioner of Eastern Cape has already stated, that our litigation, unlike other departments which don't have the offenders within their departments, emanate from both our officials and the offenders. As you can see from the presentation, they are divided into three. The first one being that of civil claims. Again, civil claims emanate from officials who, for example, would have, gotten injured in the course of their duties, thereby leading them to go to court to enforce their claims. But also, mostly these types of applications come from offenders. The offenders, including the awaiting trial detainees, because we've got a duty to incarcerate them in humane and safer and secure environment, they take us to court even in instances where the injury that they have, or the damage that they've incurred, is not a direct result of the department, but because they fall within our care and it is indeed our responsibility to ensure their safety, they take us to court for those reasons. Like any ordinary citizens, we know the process of litigation is a free process, where they don't have their own personal lawyers, they're obviously entitled to the legal aid. Also, motion applications, Chairperson, relate to actions against the department by offenders, amongst others, consideration for parole, conditions of incarceration, the transfers and weekend or compassionate leave, when, for example, the applications to go for the funerals you know, of their family members are declined by the delegated authority. They will challenge us in court in some of these instances. Whenever their rights, they feel that their rights are threatened or trampled on by the department. The last one is the category of arbitrations, Chairperson. Arbitrations are limited to the employees because they related to the labor disputes that our employees would lodge against the department related to various, you know, grounds. For example, dismissal that may be emanating from misconduct, full disciplinary processes. But also there would also cases emerging from unlabor practices relating, for example, unlawful suspension, promotion, so it would also range, I mean, arise out of a range of different reasons. Thank you, Chairperson.
The last one from myself, Chairperson, was the issue of HIV and AIDS, ARV sites in the regions. To say that in some of the regions, we have quite a very good relationship with the Department of Health, where the referral system between ourselves and the Department of Health is working very well, and therefore, even though the region might reflect one ARV site, access to treatment is guaranteed because people still access treatment in the facilities of the Department of Health. We are in a process of accrediting two more sites in the region. We looked mainly at the biggest management areas, that at least if we have ARV sites in those areas, also to minimize the movement of offenders between those big areas and the health facilities. So we are in the process of accrediting two more sites in the East London area and the Mthatha area to add to the site that is in PE. Thank you, Chairperson.
No, thank you very much, Chairperson, the National Commissioner, the Honourable Member. Before I attend to the specific points that have been raised, we would welcome the positive gesture from a public representative, that one of loving us as a department. We welcome this precisely because if you want to see the social difficulty that this country is going through, then you must visit a correctional center. It's a reflection of what our society is becoming. So, as we say in our white paper, for instance, that significantly the character of the offender population in South Africa has dramatically sort of changed. So in the correctional facility these days, you find anybody from an infant to an adult. And adults are becoming fewer. You have more sort of young people in there who supposedly should be the productive element in driving the South African economy and development. And so it's a serious challenge. So we welcome that love from a public representative. Yes. Now, just on few issues. I think the first question was, why do you have four sites, the ARV sites in KZN? Now, if I'm not mistaken, since 1987, statistics have been showing that insofar as HIV-AIDS infection is concerned in South Africa, KZN tended to be the highest, and I think followed by Eastern Cape, for a various number of reasons that formed the debate as well. And I think as the regional commissioner, Eastern Cape has alluded to this thing. I think this is also a product of the commitment on the side of both the Department of Health in the province and nationally but let's also answer the Department of Correctional Services to try and manage the issue of HIV and AIDS. Now, with regards also to issues of overcrowding in KZN, we have various sort of structures that we use. One of them is the Provincial Integrated Justice Forum, which is also chaired by a judge, and I think that's the similar sort of structure that you have in the Eastern Cape. But recently in June, we launched a criminal justice cluster, which was, I think, a further step from just, you know, an interaction between ourselves and the judiciary, but also involving different agencies, the insofar as law enforcement is concerned and so forth. The challenge now that we have is to make that structure fully functional. But on the one hand, we also have very good working relationships that we have developed with the National Prosecuting Authority, for instance, to look at issues such as restorative justice, as well as the issues related to managing issues of appeal, for instance, for offenders that are on further charges and so forth, or offenders that would have lodged the relevant appeals and stuff like that. So we use this public service, but I think there is quite a lot of work that needs to be done. One of the challenges, for instance, you still have an element of uneven development, particularly in the judiciary, in embracing correctional supervision, for instance, and alternative forms of sentencing. It depends. I mean, for instance, in far-flung sort of rural areas, you will come across a magistrate who will refuse to grant bail to a person who has stolen a pack of sweet for 150. You know, and then you must make an intervention at a macro level for that issue to be resolved. Now, the challenge there is that there is a need for us as correctional services to interact broadly with various structures in the judiciary and anywhere else to try and educate people around the need for this particular shift from being a punitive sort of the emphasis into a correctional sort of the approach and emphasis. So I think we have a challenge there. We have the challenges, but by and large, you do have, those are isolated pockets of examples that I'm talking about. But you do have, by and large, a progressive element or progressive thinking that is beginning to emerge also, you know, within the judiciary in terms of, issues relating to alternative means of sentencing as also another way of managing the issue of the overcrowding. The question of skills, and that's also a point that has been raised. The question of skills, I think it's we should also realize that when we raise this point, we're talking about a general societal problem in South Africa. It's true, where possible, we are able to monitor the question of placement or and further development of an ex-offender, for instance. In our case, as illustrated by this boy who did well in his matric, for instance, is now doing accountancy here in Cape Town. So, you know, through the efforts of our own people internally, they have been able to develop this person to a point of reintegrating successfully at a societal level. You do also have isolated cases of ex-offenders, for instance, who have started up either their small sort of co-ops, for instance, around zoning and so on, and selling products to various communities. But also some of them, they tend to invest that knowledge and skill that would have given them inside the correctional center to also develop others at a community level. So you do have these particular sort of pockets of successes here and there. Again, the challenge is how do you broaden the base at a broader community level to be able to deal with these particular issues. Lastly, there is, I think there was a question relating to the issue of community participation vis-à-vis correctional a parole board. Now, broadly speaking, community participation is essential in driving all these particular programs for us to be successful. It's quite really essential. So in public representatives, now I'm talking about yourself, it's going to be important to also play this particular role as people who lead various constituencies in assisting us in broadening community participation around correctional issues, for instance. So that we will then, I think, work together to try and turn around the situation as we experience it, at least for the better, with regards to, I think, the social development challenge that that we're facing in the country. So those are the few issues I just wanted to reflect on the basis of the questions that have been raised. Thank you very much, Chairman.
Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, National Commissioner and colleagues, I just want to respond to a few questions directed to the Western Cape and also two general ones. Let me start with the general one. Chair, you asked a question about ARV sites and the fact that the presenter was referring to 8, but then he mentioned 12. In the Western Cape, we launched the first ARV site by the Deputy Minister on 17 October, so that is why the total on the presentation and what he has said already increased. In the Western Cape, we're also busy with two other sites. We are focusing currently on Paulsmoor and also in the Overberg area to have a site in that area. I need to say that we have a positive relationship with the health department and they are assisting to accreditate the sites. Just a general comment also on the parole boards. There were two questions on parole boards. The one was the vacancies. I think the regional commissioner recently mentioned that the figures are saying 11 and then there are 6 regions. In the Western Cape, for example, there are 2 vacancies, but one can mention that where there are vacancies of chairpersons, we do have 5 chairpersons, so they are continuing with the job at the parole boards and they are not lagging behind. The other part of parole boards is also, I think, on slide 6. A part of the parole board responsibilities is to ensure social reintegration. And they are doing that by virtue of marketing and also in diesels. But I think it's also important to acknowledge that we are not where we want to be at this point in time, but there's major progress in this regard. Chair, the other questions that I want to refer to is from Honorable Fielding. Refer to the vacancies at Brandsley. I think it's important to mention that in general in the Western Cape the vacancy rate is plus minus 5%. Now, again, we need to say that is not the ideal situation, although it's much lower comparing to other of our sister departments. But to say that there's different reasons also for the vacancies, just to mention a few, you know, people are continuously resigning in the department. People are getting promoted in the department or to other departments. People are passing on, also, you know, going on pension. And some people, as the regional commissioner referred to the incident of the chairperson, some of our officials are also involved in negative behavior, and we also dismiss some of them. So that's all broad causes. In the Western Cape, we appointed the last financial year just more than 1,300 people on entry level. So it's a continuous process where we are appointing people. If I recall correctly, on middle management level, from April till yesterday, we promoted more than 130 people. So it's a continuous process where you are taking your people on lower levels to higher levels and immediately you are filling a vacancy but immediately creating another one. So there's a constant challenge to fill the vacancies. Chair, in terms of the question of the budget for the agriculture or farming, it's not clear, but I think it's important to say that the correctional services budget comes from the national office, divided through the 6 regions, and then the 6 regions to the different management areas. The budget for agriculture is basically on two of the seven budget programs. You'll find the budget for agriculture under the development program as well as on the under administration process program. So I don't know whether during the visit it was mentioned that the budget is not enough, but I think that is a constant challenge that you know not always getting what you ask for and hope for. The other question from Honourable Fielding was referring to the bail that offenders do have bail, but they are still incarcerated at the cost of 125. I think it's important to mention that his question was whether we have meetings with the JCCS. From the Western Cape side, I can say to the committee that we do have several structures. Firstly, I can mention the Ministerial Monitoring Committee. That is a meeting chaired by the Honourable MEC Ramakatlani, where all the HODs are meeting once a month, and overcrowding is a standing agenda point on that meeting with the MEC. We do have also the Development Committee meeting. We have also the joints, also important case flow management meetings on High Court level. Judge President Shope is chairperson of that specific one, and on regional and lower level, the Director of NPA, Advocate de Kok, and those structures are also meeting monthly, specifically to give attention on the case flow management and also to get out ATDs or awaiting trial detainees from correctional centres. Also to mention that the department do have quite successes in terms of diversion. In other words, referring offenders or ATDs with bail less than 1,000 back to courts. Let me use an example. At Portsmouth, we are referring back plus minus 250. And from that, you have different percentages. The success on females is roughly 70%, juveniles are roughly 60%, and your adults just over 40%. Then, Chair, it's also important then to take note that some of the offenders, you cannot send them out due to a couple of reasons. For example, you have offenders who don't have any fixed address or any address at all. The others do have an address, but people at home don't want to accept them back. And then you get also this awkward cases where a person will say, I prefer to be in correctional centers. So, we are trying to get people out, but it is not always possible. And then, Chair, also to mention that sometimes I know during visits, last week I accompanied the other part of the select committee at Drakensberg, and this engagement and the offenders will perhaps say to the members of parliament, I'm just here for this and that. And if you are going back and verify, you find often, more often, that there's a good reason for them to be there. They will portray as if it is, just for taking maybe a small turn of this or that, but you go back, you find that it is not only groceries, but it is, a whole bag full. So, Chair, that is the type of challenges that you are struggling with. But I can mention that we have a real very good cooperation, specifically also on behalf of the Western Cape, with the cluster departments, that we are really, when we are having a specific challenge, we are talking to each other and we are making sure that those who we can send out indeed been released. Chair, thank you for now.
Thanks, Shepherd. I thought that was the question that was raised by Honorable Sogoni, first what has been left out, or maybe I haven't picked up, is the representativity of the parole board. Indeed, they are. All the chairpersons are appointed from the members of the community. So they represent members of the community in that area. And as part of the members, ordinary members are also there as part of the members of the parole board. I wanted to cover that area.
Jefferson, you can see the trend here. My regional commissioner sent to select the soft issues to reply to, and I've been left with the hard issues. So let me do a sweep up operation I wanted this committee to hear them speak as, and to account for the provinces and the region. Chairperson, just to reiterate, indeed, it's important that community participation in our parole boards are promoted, and so therefore I just want to emphasize that it's community members who serve on the parole board. And for that reason, sometimes it's a bit more difficult, and we're trying to rationalize the processes and develop guidelines and make sure that there's some kind of uniformity in the way that the boards operate. But we have to remember that these are community people and often people who do not understand the correctional environment entirely. Also, the focus on community participation is to how we want to facilitate complainant participation. In other words, making it possible for them to come and make representations to the parole board. In the long run, we are saying we don't only want parole boards to sit. We want these people to continue to be active in their community so that there's a constant flow between the community and the basis of the decision-making of the parole board. We also want to see in future that as the community police forum perhaps begin to change in character to become community safety forum, that our parole board members will be very active on those fora. Some of the other questions that have not been answered, if I just run through that very quickly, Mr. Merck raised the issue of loans made to staff, and I need to explain first that we unfortunately or fortunately do not make loans to staff. I know there is a problem of receivables or staff debt in our annual report, and I need to clarify firstly that that refers to a very old case where, during the existence of the TBVC state, there were some officials who promoted themselves irregularly, and therefore part of it was following an investigation by Judge White was to retrieve, to change that situation and to get back the money from these officials who have been promoted irregularly. Now, it's quite a long process because you would imagine that these officials would only want to repay small amounts of money. So it's really a problem that the repayment of these loans have been poorly managed. Because these incidences tend to be concentrated in the former Transkei in the Eastern Cape, we've now consolidated the project team in the Eastern Cape to lead on this project and to improve the management thereof. Another component of staff debt relates to cash advances. Sometimes you have, for example, your inspectors who do a lot of traveling, who have to visit correctional centers, and for us to give them advances to pay for their accommodation and meals. And once we have done so, they must come back with the receipt and give back the money that they've not utilized. And it's those amounts of money that tend to be poorly managed. Some of them think that it's a standing advance. So we've said that no more advances, and we would rather want to work through agencies in order to begin to curb that. But in cases where there are such advances given, that these must be paid immediately, and failure to do so within a specified time will result in an automatic deduction from their salary. And we've decided to become a lot more strict in that regard. And then there's been poor management of these debtor files, and this is what the Auditor General is saying, that we've not taken full control over it. Part of the problem we've had there is also that people, because there's been poor management of these files, people exit the system without being informed, others being informed that, listen, when they leave, before the pensions are paid out, get that money back. And before we know it, their pensions are paid out and they leave with some kind of a debt. Now, that may not be the problem that we have in more recent times. It's debts of many years ago. And because of the size of the organization, we've been saying to the Auditor General, we need to make a distinction between old debt and new debt. Can we have an approach to the old debt? And part of it is to make sure that we have an adequate record of who owes us. And if we have that record, we can then still outsource that to an agency to do on our behalf. Where we do not have a record, you're quite correct, we should approach Treasury to have those amounts written off. It's no use
chasing after debt that we can't prove. But as we focus on the current, and this is what I said earlier, we focus on the current in order to manage what is within our control and improve our system. So we've got some initiatives and teams within each of the regions and management areas to really take charge of this issue. You've also referred to issues of unauthorized expenditure recorded in our annual report. Chairperson, just to say, yes, indeed, those unauthorized expenditure, we have to come back to Parliament. It's a long process to have it condoned and then to have it voted. I can assure you, it's not unauthorized expenditure in the recent past. It's before the past 2 years. And so it's a long process to get it written off, and every year you have to reflect it in your books. Where we have had further unauthorized expenditure recently, and in the report it's reflected, there's been two investigations that we have conducted recently, and in cases where people are found guilty, we quite clearly will retrieve that money from them and also charge them. So we deal quite firmly in terms of treasury requirements with such actions. The issue on medical aid expenditure and medical aid that's not managed properly, I need to explain, and sometimes it's quite difficult to explain it without putting a bit of context into place. And to say you would know that we've had a closed medical aid scheme as DCS, Medcorp, and that scheme was paid for 100% by the state. Members did not contribute. We have started the process of implementing a two-third, one-third contributory scheme. And so we've complied fully with that. Up to previous years, that's been the major problem and reason for why we were qualified. We've not retrieved the one-third from the employee. Now, we've fully complied with that, and since we've embarked on that exercise, the problem, the nature of our problem has changed. What the current problem is that whilst we introduced two-thirds and one-thirds for current employees, we have had a number of employees who worked for us many years ago who retired with a benefit of 100%. And we're one of the only departments where we have pensioners for whom we contribute 100%. In normal circumstances in government, once you retire and you exit, then all your benefits are being paid for by the government employees' pension fund. So they have a better system to check these continuation members or these retired members. The problem came when we migrated to a contributory scheme, when DCS did not have such a system. And remember, I'm saying we're the only department. Before all other departments, GPF does it. Of course, medical aid is not our business, and we didn't know how this should be done, and that's been pointed out by the Auditor General. We've since gone to GPF and made an agreement with them that we will use their database, because in terms of their database, we're able to do a range of things. We're able to check on our members in relation to the data of Home Affairs, for example. So you won't have the situation of the department contributing for deceased members. And other information on the database you'll be able to access rather than starting our own process. And so we're busy setting up a component, and we have a service level agreement with the Government Employees Pension Fund so that we can do this better. And that's the issues that we are struggling with. When it comes to the issue where the Auditor General is saying that we've been paying for deceased members, indeed, when I checked the figures, I discovered that there were about 8 members that were deceased, and we paid that money over to the medical aid on their behalf. So, Chairperson, we did not ourselves pay those deceased members. It's the medical aid, and they have a responsibility to ensure that they do not claim from us for deceased members. So we're basically going back to them and say, give our money back that you have paid for deceased members. And they've agreed to do so. So I think next year this issue, this qualification should really disappear from our audit report. I'm quite convinced about that. There are other questions, I think, again, related to Mr. Merck's question about persons with disabilities. Mr. Merck, I must confess that I don't think, and I was hoping the regional commissioners would come out more strongly on this matter, and they've not. What I can say is that it is really very frustrating if you're a person with disability and your special needs are not taken care of. What we've been focusing on more recently is just to get our policies for persons with disability in place and our procedures and to begin to determine the standards of delivery that we want to have. Unfortunately, I do not think we are doing that well in terms of monitoring the extent to which their needs are being addressed fully. But perhaps now that I've mentioned that it's a problem, the RFC may want to come back and give you a better response than what I've been able to do. But I would like them to pick up on that issue. You've also raised the issue of the capacity and the fact that teachers and nurses may not be properly remunerated, and therefore we have, as the Auditor General indeed reported, large vacancies when it comes to professionals within our system. It is a concern that we have as DCS. And again, if we don't put it into historical perspective, we won't understand why suddenly it becomes a problem. Apart from the fact that we have a general problem of scarce skills in the country, of nurses and medical practitioners, in DCS the problem is a lot worse. And it's a lot worse since we have decided to phase out payment of overtime. You may not remember, but our professionals were able to work over weekends as custodial officers, and in that way they could supplement the income. And that became a retention strategy for DCS. When that disappeared, we were in serious trouble. What we said we needed to do, there are a number of interventions that we've started to address this issue. One is by government broadly. You would recall that following the wage negotiations, there was an announcement that for different occupational classes, the state would introduce occupation-specific dispensation. And this would apply to nurses, to psychologists, to teachers. And so obviously we will piggyback on there in order to make sure that our people also benefit for better remuneration. But that will not help to give us the competitive edge. It will simply mean that our people are on the same level as those people elsewhere in the public service. And if we have to compete even within the public service, we'll lose. So, Chairperson, what we've been struggling with is how do we keep these people? The one thing that we have said is, let's acknowledge that these are professionals, and let's acknowledge that we have to make sure that the conditions under which they work really recognize their professional status. How do we do that? It's perhaps by to declare certain facilities as facilities that host these people and rather move our people to where these specialists are. We refer to that as centers of expertise so that we begin to concentrate our resources and give them possibility for upward mobility, better working conditions, job satisfaction and so on. That's one option. The other option we're looking at is to accept, not the other option, we're actually looking at that quite practically as a solution. We accept that in some instances we will never compete with the private sector and with other sectors of government, such as in the case of pharmacists. And I've just recently approved that we appoint a transaction advisor to look into the possibility of outsourcing our pharmaceutical services, given the nature of the problems that we've experienced there. So that's one other solution. The other way in which we are looking at it is that I've asked the Chief Deputy Commissioner of Corporate Services to look at the, now that we're moving towards implementation of 7-day work week, we look at the possibility of paying a service allowance to all professionals working at DCS in order to give us that competitive edge. So, and we have said to DPSA that we have to be, to take such drastic action, because you will know more recently, if you look at some of the figures of TB and the risk of multi-drug resistance TB, we cannot take chances within our correctional service, centers where we have concentration of people there, and we need drastic steps. So on the issue of care skills, we really engage seriously on that. I'm not going to cover litigation, but let me, again, my colleagues have not address the concern raised by Mr. Magnotti around the nature of collusion between inmates and offenders and the escape. It is indeed a problem, you know, and I always say that within correctional facilities where officials and inmates spend such a lot of time together, and we have, and where you have very low levels of job satisfaction, and you work largely with people who are correctional officials and who enter the system young, and being often impressed by the antics of inmates and all those factors. It's not a problem unique to South Africa. It's a problem worldwide that in correctional facilities we have to cope with the issues of corruption. Again, yes, Jefferson, very briefly, it requires a multi-pronged approach. Your strategies, your fraud prevention strategies, the training that you have to give your members around issues of ethics. We, in terms of our integrated human resource strategy, we are saying let's begin to professionalize correctional services. That would require correctional officials, for instance, to register with the council. And if there is misconduct, the council will also have to deregister them, and there will be, you know, consequences. And talking about consequences, that's another dimension of what there should be in order for us to avoid collusion. If we see it, we need to act firmly where possible. And you would have seen that with the expose by special assignment, I've sent a very strong message. I called those people in myself and I dismissed them on the spot. Even though our legislation at that point seemed not to allow us to do so, we've since found that there are indeed legislative provisions that would enable us to dismiss people summarily, and we've done so, and we send the message that if we find that you collude and compromise the system, we will not take kindly to that. Quite clearly, there's also an interest in to seeing a large number of people who we suspend. What we're saying in our correctional environment, we cannot take chances. We must make sure that there are consequences when there's any disciplinary violation. But we may come back to that. What I'm wanting to say here, in the fight against corruption, different strategies that we must apply, including the vetting of officials, ensuring consequences are there, ensuring greater levels of specialization, so that we can, once we are vetted and once we have trained, we can have a focused approach to people doing custodial services. I think I've picked up on those gaps that my colleagues have left out, Chairperson, and perhaps in the next round they can pick up further on the issues of disability if they can amplify on that. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Commissioner, even for the responses there. Thank you very much. Welcome, Dr. Van Herden. Thank you very much for coming. Colleagues, we are having this second bite. Our Musoko is ready to fire from the hip.
My question is very
important. Can you check on the script, the Honorable Nyanda?
Yes. I'm really sorry it was on the last page and I forgot to turn the page over. The issue of unnatural death, and you've asked also the question why we have so many, and also whether we still have the 26s and the 28s operating in our system. That was the one question. The other one related to assets that I've responded to earlier. But let me come back to the issue of unnatural death. The deaths that we record in our annual report clearly would contain two categories, the natural and the unnatural, and therefore it requires an explanation what qualifies as unnatural. An unnatural death relates to largely incidences of suicide committed by inmates within our facilities. And in some cases also, may arise from injuries that they may have sustained, prior coming into our facilities or whilst they were in our facilities, either at the hands of fellow inmates, or in some instances, as you've seen in the case of Krugersdorp, on the hands of some members themselves. So that's the nature of the variety of unnatural deaths. What we are saying is, in And perhaps my colleagues can pick up on the extent to which gangsterism may be the result, because yes, indeed, inmate on inmate violence and the result of that would also qualify as unnatural. So those figures speak for itself, but in relation to the question of the gangs, I will say that yes, many of these violence of inmate upon inmates, or even violence of inmates upon members, arise because of the rituals, the different rituals of gang members, you would know. And for me to say that we do not have gangs in our facilities would be a blatant lie. We do have gangs. And we are saying that whilst we will take very strong actions against gangs and the gang leaders, in fact, my opening statement, I've said that it's gang leaders specifically that I would want to target to send to Kroksat, to our super maximum facility where they can be kept in single cells with a very limited ability to influence people. We will do those interventions in order to break the power of the gangs. But we are also saying that part of our strategy it's not only on gangs, it's our response to organized crime within our facilities. So the fact is that criminals have become a lot more sophisticated, and their networks operate from within our correctional facilities. And we need to become even more sophisticated as the Department of Correctional Services. So one of the things that we are doing is to strengthen our information gathering and information analysis ability as the Department of Correctional Services, so that we can really, together with our partners in the criminal justice cluster, the police, the NPA, develop fairly sophisticated responses. And we've had many discussions with our sister departments. More recently, I've discussed with NPA a service level agreement between the two departments in order to begin to tackle the issue of organized crime, including that of gangsterism. So we are very concerned, and we know that we have to develop and become a lot more sophisticated. And so our security intervention, the vetting, and the capacitating to improve our information gathering capability, these are the things that are receiving some attention.
Thank you, Chairperson. Last week we were in Dragon's Bay. The juveniles there, I'm afraid. I just want to comment to congratulate these people. Are working under a very stressful there. I never thought that the ruler can kill somebody. A toothbrush can kill somebody. I was shocked what I saw in Dragon's Bay. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Mami and the Commissioner. Let's welcome our Minister. Thank you very much for coming from this. But I can assure you, your detachment up until now has been fairly well. No, up until now, really, no, that's been very well. Let's go to the other round conditions. Honorable Pogo, you want to come in, followed by Honorable Moseki, in that order.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. And good afternoon to the Minister. But I'm not a member of this committee, Chair. I now understand why people, they say they like this department. I mean, from the comments that I hear, but I'm not convinced that I may like it. I may like it for other reasons of keeping your offenders away from us. However, Chair, the Commissioner is busy. I wanted him to leave. But the Commissioner of KZN and others are there. I don't want to call him Chief Whip or the Commissioner. he calls us public representatives as well. Chair, I'm worried now the Commissioner is not there, but I think that other commissioners are capable. Commission Chair will take it over. It's in charge now.
All right, Chair, no comment from us. Chair,
I asked the first question. It's around facilities. That question was also not responded to on page 8, where there was an expenditure of 75%. And I suppose that is a capital expenditure. And I had compared that to the overcrowding that is there. But the reason why I wanted to meet the commissioner of the university is that the core function of this department is correctional services. But when I look at the expenditure on Shepherd, I know that you must direct this meeting. But when I look at the expenditure here, administration on page 8, 2 billion. Well, I understand security. But on correction, I'm not sure whether it's supposed to be correctional services or what this correction means. It's less than 1 billion. Now, I'm saying, I seem to be lost on capital payments for capital assets. On the seventh bullet on page 8. Again, it's 1 billion, and only 69% was spent there. I'm saying, Jefferson, I just need explanation on that. One is a bit is interested and would like to understand. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Sogoni. You must understand the commissioner that the Sogoni is our specialist in finances. So that's why he's serving the Finance Commission at the same time, find a Finance Committee. So we're happy to take the questions.
Yeah, Honorable Museki, then Honorable Fielding. Okay, go ahead, Honorable Fielding.
Chairperson, could you explain to us the cause of money misspent or misused or stolen by the previous officials? Therefore, they got a bad reflection on this audit and general report. But my understanding is, if staff are responsible for that money and that staff is discharged, then the pension fund of that staff must pay back to the department that money. And my understanding is that the national treasure must pay over that money to the Department of Agricultural Services to don't have a bad reflection the next year on his audit report. So Mr. Peterson must explain us that. That's all.
Thanks, Ethan. Keep your mind here, Leon. That's made my day. Thanks very much, Honorable Museki.
Chairperson, on the reference was made to a dedicated program on the awaiting child. There was a new law terminology used yesterday. Offenders, I believe so. No, not offenders. I'm not sure. That's what term is.
Inmates.
Yeah, I think. Awaiting trial inmates. I think we're getting transformed, so we must be careful about the term. So, if you could just a little bit enlighten us on that. What does it really entail, that program? Because it's extremely important. As you said earlier on, it will actually appear that most of the problems that you have with regard to overcrowding is caused by that. So what will be that dedicated program that you're talking about? The other important question that I think I would want your good self talking to is about your retention process in the light of your people leaving to other entities, not only departments. Other your retention strategy. You could just tell us about that and some elaboration around that. It will help Chairperson because we are worried that when you lose people that you have invested so much in. The last one, which is a very, very soft one, Chief. Very soft one. Public education about in order to help you, good sir, on the good work that you do. Have you produced something like a small manual that can tell us about the role that you can do as members of the entire community, as a general, as public education? So we are able also not to be to complement the work that you're doing, not losing the sight of what you are doing within the same framework. If you have some kind of a manual that you have produced around.
Thank you, Remuseke. Honorable Mac.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think most of my difficult questions is finished. I'm getting softer now. But we have two facilities. I think the one is in Mangong. They all, two of them are maximum, as are run by private companies. Right? And this, what is it? PP, private, I don't know. Tongue twister now. Yeah. My question is now, the comparison by what they, private companies, run and what we run. Do they do it more efficient, cost effective, and then financially? With a maximum, I don't think there will be much rehabilitation done. Or is there some rehabilitation? But the question around also to that is, if they are better run and more efficient, are they in the pipeline of adding to them? Are they also in the pipeline of maybe if our private companies outside can do a better job in rehabilitation or more assistance with rehabilitation, as I see we are trying to do in this new law that we are busy with, and again being briefed tomorrow, there is a tendency or something that says NGOs can be brought in more. Besides NGOs, can we use outside companies that specialize in rehabilitation? Is there a possibility that they will also be able to give more assistance? That is where these private companies running facilities. The next question would be it's good to see that there's an internal audit that has been established, and that there's only 8 vacant posts, 20 posts, but there's 8 vacant. When will that be filled? But they do have a problem. As is stated in the report, much of the budget has been spent on traveling. How do we curb that? And I understand you most probably know now already where I come from, so I know distances. And I mean, this is an expenditure that, as I've heard the National Commission also talking about, distances, it makes it very awkward for correctional services. Traveling expenses, taking even children to court, that we narrow that gap and spend less on traveling. Then I also agree with the Commissioner and National Commissioner. You know, I still think when I visit some correctional facilities that really only the name has changed, they still drunk. I think we need this whole new approach, Commissioner, that you alluded to, that we specialize, that we maybe for children, that we have the zones. I think the minister also spoke to you yesterday, that we specialize our facilities, especially for waiting trial detainees. They will need a total different facility than the killer inmate that you have, or the maximum facility. For a waiting trial detainee, it will be a totally different. So don't we need to build, develop them and build facilities? In the olden days, they had all these reformed schools, where they had these four reformed boys and all these schools where you had these juveniles that you can send them to. And I think we haven't looked at all of this, even centers for women separately and women with children. Maybe could develop a plan around this, a different facility for different type of inmate or the profile that suits that, and to more enhance in the rehabilitation side. Then there's one, my last thing, and I don't know why I don't hear the Western Cape Commissioner, Mr. Smallberger, my God, he must really help me and also speak for me. And everywhere I've spoken to the minister, and everywhere I come, I speak about this thing, about all these new facilities being built everywhere. And I think it's the third or fourth year going that I'm pleading for the Central Guru for one. It's a very safe place in the Guru. The area, the location, everything. So I'm still pleading. Thank you, Jefferson.
Thank you very much. So, if you went up?
Okay, but I just tell you, calling back must be more because it's
clean. Yeah, I led a delegation to Brantley during the program taking Parliament to the people. There is a unit there with the those men and young boys they call it what of hope, what is it? Group of hope. Those young men, I'm telling you, they are doing so well. You look at some of the things they've done, in you ask yourself that kind of talent. Now, my question to, I'm glad my honorable minister is here. There is this gentleman who's in charge here, that's the social worker, whatever. Just hold something. But, that man will be leaving us very soon. And those young boys pleaded with us to see, they said, please, Parliament, can you assist and tell the minister? We don't want this man to go because we are doing all these things because of him. And he is our hope now because we are better people because those young men, one of them even cried. I said, what's the problem? They said that they've made submissions, but they seem as if they're not getting any joy. I want to ask the minister, what can you do? Because he said, no, because it seems as if I'll be leaving soon because it seems that I don't get any response from the department. That these services, are not needed or what. Yeah. If we can get exactly what's going on, we need that man there. You know? When we get to add those items that have, you might think they bought them from somewhere. And they're making those clothes and track suit and whatever, and give them to those childless families, kids. And those who... I hope that today we'll leave this place smiling. We'll get a positive response. We need that man. You know, from what we had from those inmates there, it was very touching and moving. I want to appreciate the initiative by the department to vet officials. But I want to check which level are you vetting? The senior one, the middle management, or even the incoming one? Because corruption is everywhere in all the levels. But there must be a level where corruption is rife. It can't be in all the levels. As the commissioner said, those who are in the department, they get excited by seeing some of these things. They look at this long-serving inmates. These are role models, because some of them, I'm telling you, that are breaking there. You say, no. One of the interests would have said, no. Some of the officials, we can pay them. Those who are arrested for this case heist and stuff, those guys were told are managed. They break, they say, no, some of them can pay them. This one. One said, no, we were owning some of the officials, they were owning them. How, I don't know, but if it was an intelligence committee, I wouldn't tell you how they think that they're owning them. In which way that they need to do it. But since this is an open meeting, I can't say it. But you get cold, but just when they tell you how are they owning them. I agree with what the minister said yesterday or the day before or whatever. How much, I want to take the region here, how much are we spending on suspended officials? How long are we going to continue paying for people who are sitting at home doing nothing while the cases are dragging so long, taking their own time? How much per region? How many officials have suspended per region? And how much are we spending for those? And how long are we going to continue paying them while they're sitting at home? By them sitting at home, by the department also keep on paying them, is it not affecting service delivery in this department that we love so much? I'm glad Mpumalanga and Mpopo Northwest, the escapes are very, very few. I'm so glad. For now, I'm happy. Let's continue the good work. I'm also worried about the vacancies. If we can be told that the measures that are going to put in place to try and reduce these vacancies, because year in, year out, when you present your budget or annual report, these vacancies are always there. It seems as if we're not moving on this one. What can we do? Because at the time we were going to say, no, we can't accept this anymore. This vacancy must be filled. What is the problem? Because I know, Commissioner Peterson, you can't tell us that you don't have money, because I know that you are spending trend. There's been challenged by the AG, as you're aware. You are spending trend. So you can't tell me there's no money. But why are we not seeing this? At the same time, I know that some departments are poaching your officials like nobody's business. They are really looting you. They are professional looters when it comes to take your officials from you. Now, this department has become a training ground for other departments. They are looting officials from you all the time. It boils down to what the question by Honorable Mutseki about your retention strategy or policy. I'm glad you're having it here in one of the slides, but it seems as if it's not enough. What else can we do to try and stop these professional looters who are looting your staff, whom you've trained and spent so much and invested so much on them, but still, when they see green pastures, they jump to those where the bread is buttered. On the question of parole board, I'm glad my colleagues have asked that question. We asked this a year ago. Maybe today we're going to get some answers. Are you getting any joy now from the Department of Public Works in making sure that some of the dilapidated cells or even buildings are renovated or maintained. We're in Northwest, where one roof was just about to fall. And we even said to officials there, if it's not fixed, these prisoners or inmates want to see them removed from this cell because it's dangerous. We don't want this department that does so much to be on the news for wrong reasons. The question is, are you now getting joy from the Department of Public Works in renovating or maintaining your building, either cells or normal buildings, or even ablution facilities, because some of your centers, the ablution facility is not something you can write home about. Yeah, the recruitment. We reluctantly accepted the method that we had used in recruiting officials, where you outsource this service. With due respect, Honourable Minister and Commissioner, I think now we have matured enough. I think we have trained enough staff to can do this. Because I checked the kind of money we're spending for those companies that are doing this job for us. We're spending a lot of money. A lot of millions. We're spending millions. Now, how long are we going to continue outsourcing this service? Don't you think we have people enough who are trained can do this for us. Now each region, can we know the longest serving ATDs in your respective region? The longest serving ATDs. I'm glad the Commissioner Jordan and I said that they are having these JCP SLASA meetings with the provincial and even in the sub-region level. But are they bearing any fruit? Because the ATDs seem to be growing day by day. If those meetings are bearing fruit, we should see these ATDs being reduced. Applying the relevant sections that are there in the Criminal Procedure Act to be in our own legislation in the Consular Service. Yeah, I was having a bite as well because I've been quiet. Yeah, colleagues, is there any other question? We should allow the partner to respond now. I think there are many questions. I'll be flexible if they may want to come in now. Or later. Yeah. As a norm, then you'll unleash the detachment accordingly. Over to you.
No, thank you very much. You know, I would also ask what I was delegated to send it for the National Commissioner when he had to attend to some agency issues, Chairperson. So I will also ask my colleagues to also come in with regards to further elaboration on some of the issues that have been raised. Mine is a very brief one. The question of public education material, I think the department does issue publications around its policies and so on. But not only that, I think if you were to take rounds and statistics from one region to another, DCS has been really going out to to various communities, for instance, what we call community outreach programs, to try and mobilize support for community involvement in correctional programs. But also the very same issue that we spoke about in terms of the actual functionality of the criminal justice plans, that we have put quite a lot of effort around those particular structures. Recently we just had a corrections week. Now it would have been, of course, very interesting to have public representatives actively participating in mobilizing various constituencies to be part of the corrections week program that was driven by DCS. So when I said earlier on that indeed there is a role that public representatives could play in driving correctional, in assisting DCS in driving correctional programs, it is because we have effectively started the active steps to go out in reaching out to various communities in marketing who we are and what we do and what is it that we also would like to do for the future, and also elements of collaboration between ourselves and various stakeholders in achieving the set objectives. So I would want to leave it a bit at this stage and ask my colleagues, Chairperson, to also elaborate on some of the points that have been asked. But also to say that some of the questions are interrelated. I think, Chairperson, your point around the, I think it's more to do with retention strategy. I think you said that. So when we respond to it, we also want to match those particular points that are more or less similar or belong to one of the same sort of topic. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. I may miss some of the issues, but whilst getting ready, let me just pick up on some. I think there was a request to elaborate on the retention strategy. And I was saying our target is largely to zoom in on the scarce skills, because that's where the vacancy levels are highest and the outflow at its peak. And I've also indicated earlier that we need to do categorize these skills to see where the problem occurs. And I've said within the health professionals is particularly high. We have severe problems when it comes to IT personnel. We've also seen that we have difficulty retaining auditors. So for all these different categories, we obviously need different strategies. In addition to what I've said about the centers of expertise, about the introduction of the service allowance, we've also introduced other measures. For example, upon evaluating our posts, upgrading those posts, you will see we've made significant progress in terms of attracting medical doctors, because we've now upgraded all those medical doctor posts to level 12. Of course, now that we're remunerating them on that level, we're also expecting them to be available at odd hours and to work extra time in order to justify that. We have introduced a headhunting framework that will enable us to circumvent certain recruitment procedures in order to fast-track the appointment of people with scarce skills. We have introduced counter-offers, that when someone with a scarce skill comes to us, we would offer to match the salary that person is being offered outside or by, whether in state or in private sector. To a large extent, we're also saying that, you know, this is a real difficulty, because in some cases we are concerned about the growth of contractors and consultants. But in some instances we have to accept that government will never be able to compete, especially when it comes to specialists in the area of project management skills. It's a scarce skill. You cannot appoint someone at the rate that government pays with someone with project management skills. Or protect and keep pharmacists. So part of what we are doing is to look at outsourcing of some of these difficult areas. We've also revisited some of our contracts with partner departments such as CETA, so that CETA can negotiate differently for people with specialized skills in the area of IT, and therefore to have CETA officials to service some of our IT requirements. So it's really multi-pronged. With auditors, we've introduced measures such as paying the professional fees as a way of retaining them. In addition to paying their professional fees, obviously, to compete with other departments to also upgrade these posts to a higher level. So it is indeed a multi-pronged approach. But the question that the chairperson is asking, that which may be related to this, I think in cases of specialized skills, we need to really focus on some of these measures I've referred to. But when it comes to normal vacancies, chairperson, I first need to make an explanation, because this is misunderstood in the context of these days. You would have noticed in our annual report, we would say reduce our vacancies from 7 or 8% to 5% and to maintain a 5% level of vacancies. I need to explain that perhaps we need to find a different way of setting those targets. Because one of the things that happened during the course of this year, I must tell you, is that we've received in this particular year 54 million rand from National Treasury for new posts. So what it means is you have 54 million and you must break it down into actual posts. And you create that post on the system before you can start advertising it. So you may have started the year with a vacancy level of 5%. But now with the creation of post to the value of 54 million, suddenly you pushes up your vacancy level to 12%. Now, does it mean that you're not successful in reducing your vacancy level? Because you constantly have to create these new posts. I think we need to understand that in context. Within DCS, to implement the white paper, we've said we have to implement the white paper. And to do that, we need staff. And Treasury has given us, in the first year, 60 million rand to create such posts. In the second year, 54 million. In addition to that, chairperson, we have said to Treasury we want to move towards a 7-day establishment. And in order to migrate to a 7-day establishment, we said over a period of 3 years, we have to create 10,311 entry-level posts. So the point I'm making is, if Treasury gives us the money starting 1st of April, we don't tomorrow get people appointed into those posts. The turnaround time is anything up to 6 months within these years, which is totally unacceptable. For the public service, the norm is for the turnaround time to be around 3 months. And the fact, it relates to the point that you've made about the utilization of external agencies. We've used agencies because we know with the level of appointments we make in DCS, we're one of the few departments who would accept people to work for us with matric. So we get millions of applications. And if we have to get bogged down in ordering and organizing and shortlisting that, that's what our staff will do full-time. In fact, at the rate at which we have employed, we have a problem in the sense that many of our staff almost work full-time on shortlisting, on interviewing. In fact, I've earlier said this is why some of the artists can't be here, because they're busy with appointments of very senior and critical posts. So we've been involved over the last few years with one of the most intensive recruitment processes. Now, I do acknowledge that when you look at the growth of new numbers entering our system, it's an issue that came up in Scopa yesterday, that the numbers, the growth of our establishment from certainly a few years ago where we had 33,000 staff, we're now talking about 42,000, and we're moving towards 45,000. Now, in any organization, that's quite a radical growth. But we must also remember that's the net growth. We still have people leaving the system. So I think we have made very, very special. I'm not saying with that we are doing well. I'm saying the turnaround time of 6 months on average is totally unacceptable. We have to reduce that to the norm of the public service of 3 months. What we are doing in order to do so is we've recently tasked corporate services to revisit the delegations. You will know a lot of our appointments continue to be centralized either at head office
or at regional office level. We are saying, for goodness sake, let us get people at the lower level to make those appointments. Then you will recall, of course, we've just stepped out of the Dali Commission with all these allegations of corruption in the recruitment process because of poor controls and corrupt activity of our appointments. So as we do so, we must also make sure that our controls are really in place and our people are well trained so that we do not go back to that allegations that emanated from or resulted in the Dali Commission investigation. So it's a kind of heads you lose and tails you lose type of situation. Very cautiously, we have to move to delegating these functions whilst making sure that our systems and accountability mechanisms are in place. The Minister has given us an instruction to do so and to find ways of shortening our whole cycle of recruitment that we have to introduce by virtue of the scrutiny of the Jali Commission. Now we have to develop that confidence to relax so that we can begin to improve that process. Chairperson, the issue of spending on infrastructure, especially in the light of overcrowding, is something that came up in the previous cycle of questions, and it's bearing its head again in the next cycle. And I must confess and be quite honest, Chair, that we have not done well. We would be the first to acknowledge that within the area of infrastructure, we've really struggled. I can give a whole range of reasons why that may be the case, but it's not going to help me out of it. Obviously, the question is, what is it that we're doing going forward? And I would like to perhaps focus on that for a moment. Firstly, we're quite excited. We've recently appointed at the level of a chief director in DCS, the level of a deputy commissioner, someone to drive our infrastructural development program. Mr. Van Andrade, we have posted him from the Department of Public Works. He knows the system, and we will be able to engage Public Works from the inside, we hope. So he's joined us recently, and we're very excited about his appointment. In fact, he's immediately started to organize the work in such a way that for us to systematically manage better the different components. One of the things we have recognized is that the ramp project that you may be familiar with, we've not received very much money with the ramp project. We've decided, let's change it. Let's move towards a planned maintenance program and let them come up with defining what it is we want to get out of that. We have Mr. Smallberger, together with the Chief Financial Officer and Mr. Van Andrade, serving on a very specialized project team that we have established to begin to look at how we fast-tracking and how we better manage our infrastructural development program. And particularly, how we better use the human resources that we have within DCS, both our inmates and the specialized employees that we have, to enhance the infrastructural programs through our own resources. So that's a very important focus of our new approach. Plan maintenance using own resources. And lastly, we are saying that some of these projects that we, infrastructure projects by its very nature, are multi-year projects. You plan it and it takes forever. You know, now you're going to, within the building of the 5 new correctional facilities, we had to go through transaction advisors. Now we have to put out requests for qualifications, and then we have to put out requests for tenders, and then you have to evaluate those things, and then the construction starts. It's a very long, multi-year process. We are saying that while those long-term processes are underway, let's also accelerate in areas where we can. You will know, for example, that in many instances we have some underutilized buildings that may not meet some of our basic requirements for security. We have asked them, the infrastructure team, to look at that issue. Like, they've, for example, identified at Zonderwater, there are facilities that are standing empty. We have said, why don't we use those facilities? But we put some other basic mechanisms in place first. That the primary focus should on strengthening the outside perimeter through putting a very powerful, strong fence. And on the good side, let's use our own resources to improve the facilities so that we can keep inmates who are classified as minimum in those facilities. So I'm saying up to now we've not been good. We've not spent what we have received. When the fact that infrastructure takes long, when the money gets onto our budget, by the time we get to the process of building, you'll find that the price has escalated. That makes it totally unaffordable for us. So we've looked at ways of improving that. We are very excited about the fact that finally it seems that we're moving on the procurement of the new correctional facilities. So I can assure you that's the matter that's receiving our full attention. The issue of suspension of officials, Jefferson, unfortunately, we do not have the information in our annual report or in our subsequent information broken down per region. So perhaps I can ask Mr. Sikamyan and the rest of the team just to break that information down per region and to submit it to the committee at a later stage in terms of suspensions per region. But one of the things that I need to point out first is if you look at, and I'm looking at the annual report of the previous year, we see the number of people suspended in that year was 738. And the cost, if I read it correctly, was 34 million rand. When we look at the annual report for this year, we see the number of suspensions came down to 483 at a cost of 9.7 million rand. Jefferson, surely that must tell a story. Without wanting to be too opportunistic, I have to acknowledge within that particular year we had large numbers of suspensions arising from the strike action that we've seen. But the other part of the story that must be told is the fact that we've been bogged down with a disciplinary code and procedure that really tied us down to a great extent and meant that our people remain suspended for a much longer period than is the case in that department. You will know, for example, that in the public service, the possibility of, when it comes to the appeal process, in DCS, we were compelled by our disciplinary procedure to have a hearing, an appeal hearing, where all the facts are examined and the case is reopened. And it dragged on forever. And the person, and of course, in terms of our labor legislation, we cannot do anything but continue to pay the salary of that person for as long as that person is not found guilty. Unfortunately, that is the case. But what we have done, we have negotiated an amendment to our disciplinary code that now, for the first time, allows us to have paper appeals. In other words, you don't have to go through the whole inquiry, and therefore it will speed up the process of and the period of time that people remain on suspension. And we're quite positive that will further impact on the numbers. Unfortunately, as we are moving over to the new system, people who are transgressed and whose disciplinary hearings are only coming to an end late will still have to be given the right to appeal in terms of the previous process. But once we have dealt with that backlog, I'm quite convinced that the process will be speeded up considerably, Jim. I think let me give my colleagues an opportunity to come in and pick up on other issues that they may not have responded to. Are they?
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to mention the following also concerning suspension. Just to add that our current approach and policy is still that whilst a person is being dismissed and the appeal is still pending, that person is still receiving salary and that person remains suspended. If you uplift the suspension, then the person will not be dismissed at the end of the day, because if it goes on arbitration, the commissioner in arbitration is very strict. They will just argue that the trust relationship is not broken, the person is still working or just in another position, so you never get rid of the people that is corrupt and who is corrupting the system, Chair. So by saying that, it's almost that we will never reach a stage where we have zero suspensions or that we have zero rand in terms of suspensions. Because if you dismiss a person, in fact, it means that the trust relationship is broken and then the person is suspended. Chair, let me just refer to your question in terms of the group of hope at Brandsley. Chair, it's not clear why are the offenders crying about Mr. Pansegrou. Mr. Pansegrou is a social worker by profession. He's very, very recently promoted to assistant director. And I
it's not clear to me what is the request that we need to keep the person, because he's recently promoted, and I can also say that the person, if he wants to move upward in the department, the individual should also apply for, you know, promotional posts. So in terms of the group of hope per se, we are busy rolling it out to also other management areas in the Western Cape, referring to 8. Now, I know the desire from Pansegrove side is to roll it out nationally, but you cannot roll it out nationally if you're not starting somewhere. So I don't know whether they refer to that he wants to be a national rollouter, I don't know. So maybe, but if that is the complaint to yourself, Chair, then obviously he will be lost for Bramsley as such, because then he will play a different role. So I'm not clear in terms of that, and I think it will be difficult to speculate on that part. Chair, let me just, in terms of Mr. Mack's question, I was thinking he is responding to his own question, because he was pleading that we need to curb traveling expenses. And if we are building in the central Karoo, I think it will be the opposite. Chair, that is just in a light aside, but I think also during the Inviso last year, Mr. Mack mentioned that where the minister was present, I think there's due cognizance taken of the plea or the demand, but I think the challenge is currently that we need to build the facilities where the biggest needs are, and that is normally in the metropoles or the surrounding areas. So I don't think the central Karoo is a rule out forever, but I think the priority is currently in the Western Cape, around about Cape Town, and also in the Paarl area. Therefore also the site in Paarl that is already identified, and which is also mentioned in the report, that will be the next new center in the Western Cape. But in the central Karoo at Beaufort West, Jefferson, there's also currently some renovations at that center. So also that we'll still invest in that center there. Chair, let me pause there, and I'll come back if there are... Let me respond to your question in terms of the longest serving offenders in the different regions. In terms of the Western Cape, we have 297 offenders that is incarcerated for 24 months and longer. Chair, for each and every one of those ATDs or waiting trial detainees, we do have a reason why they are still, or why are they so long in correctional centers. I can also mention that there's also a process and procedure that we refer, that is now nationally, all ATDs that is 90 days or 3 months and longer incarcerated on a monthly basis, all those names, to the DPP's office to make them aware so that there can be interaction to discuss why are the offenders so long. Chair, but for the 293 in the Western Cape, we do have for each and every one a reason why they are still ATD for so long. Chair, I just want to check, and maybe I will be in a position to give you the longest serving ATD. I'll just come back to that. Thank you, Chair.
I'll wait there with question.
Thank you, Chairperson. There was a question about what the remand centers will be doing, or those centers that we will be keeping only awaiting trial detainees. I will respond to that one. We are acknowledging the fact that people that are awaiting trial are presumed innocent until proven guilty. Therefore, the types of programs that we would render to them wouldn't be the same as the programs that we render to certain inmates that are sentenced. And also looking at what type of privileges they can be entitled to. There's a process
process of looking at the privilege system of what they can be entitled to as they are awaiting trial. There's a process of looking at other issues of restorative justice. There's a process of looking at how do you orientate them while they are in a correctional center. Also looking at the category of the offenses that they've allegedly committed. In other areas, we would find that it's an issue where somebody can just be reconciled with his or her family in a case where somebody stole a goat from his own family, as an example, as cases that one would find in areas like the Eastern Cape. So it's basically to look at programs that are suited for them that wouldn't implement in a center where they are sentenced offenders. The longest serving inmate in the awaiting trial inmate in the Eastern Cape is the one who was there from 2002, but I'm still waiting for the exact figures in terms of others between 18 and that period. That is 4 years, Chairperson.
Thanks, Chairperson. I'm still also waiting for the information around the longest serving, because we've got categories in terms of the months and the years. But from 2 years upwards, I'm still waiting for information, Chairperson. No, Commissioner. Chairperson, sorry. The Commissioner explained to the Honourable Chair that breakdown is not with us in the annual report.
When can I get it from the Honourable Minister?
We're waiting for it now.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not sure from the Honourable Minister.
Chairperson, I'm not happy with the way they are responding to this, and even to the remand sentence. You see, when you have managers who don't know what's happening in their regions, you get this kind of answer. I'm not happy. I'm not happy. Because that's information that you should have on your fingertips if you're a manager. So I'm not particularly impressed at all. These are things that make us look bad. That we have to come back here. These are things that people should have on your fingertips if you're a manager. But let me just quickly, before Commissioner comes back, the issue of outsourcing and recruitment, because they are not responding to it. I think Commissioner a little bit responded to that. There's no way, Chairperson, that we can do it ourselves all the time, particularly at recruitment at entry level. If you go to headquarters, I walk headquarters all the time. You go to some of the conference centers. Sometimes we even have to use a lot of inmates from Pretoria, not to sort out, but just to put things into boxes and everything. In talking to Commission about this, we felt the thing has got to be outsourced. Our members are not trained to do this, because it's millions who apply. So you'd rather have that done by a company that can do it properly, give us the gross list, and check on who is best suited for this. And I'm talking at the recruiter level, at entry level. It's huge numbers. And it's numbers that everybody should be having. But on that one, even on other posts, there will be outsourcing. And Parliament, I know, will not like it all the time, but sometimes it helps us to root out the criminality within the system. And therefore, we're not accused of the corruption that we're always accused of. It does help us. It might not be the best thing. We might spend a lot of money, but it's not something that we can wish away. Even the issue of suspension, I'm not happy the way they're Commission has given the number, the 400 and something, which we dealt with at the portfolio committee. We broke it down at the portfolio committee. Managers should know how many people in my region are suspended. They should know that. Just the group of hope. I like that group of hope. They've won awards for us. They've done a lot of things. But let's just come back to Pantechou. He's a social worker. People have to apply if they want bigger and better position in the department. And I'm one boss that will say, Pantokro can go if he wants to go. But he cannot pressurize us. He must apply like everybody else and get the position. I will not be blackmailed by anybody. And he knows I like that group. We will not be blackmailed. And the issue of rolling out of that, I've got a cap of that group which I always wear. And when people ask me, I tell them, this is one group I'm proud of in Brantley. But we shouldn't also be duped into anything like that, where a member of the department thinks they can run to the portfolio and select committee because they're not getting what they want. I stand firm against that. I stand very firm. He won't be the first one. Nor will he be the last one. I don't back off on that thing because you've got to do the right thing. The program is good, no doubt about it. Rolling out to other places needs to be taken on a pilot project, step by step. That's very good. It's like the Kumani project in Portsmouth. Very good project. But Shoti, who works on that program, cannot want to say to me, I've been working on this program, Minister Foray, it's a good program, gave you good publicity, therefore make me a DP. Bullshit. The issue of remand centers. Again, this remand center issue is not explained properly. Cabinet has agreed in principle to have these remand centers. We are leading that NHD task team, the 12 years, as a department. But we are together with other departments in that. We are the lead department. And therefore, there's got to be, at some stage, once we identify, we do all those that Commissioner said we'll do, an agreement between ourselves, the police, and justice. Because ATDs do not only belong to us. We don't train our officials to look after ATDs. We don't. We train them to look after sentenced offenders and to do our core business, which is rehabilitation. And therefore, we have to have a protocol of an agreement with other departments. What do we do? Now that we've identified the centers, what do we do? Now, rights and privileges of awaiting trials will be different to those of sentenced offenders. By virtue of the nature that they are not guilty yet, protocols, UN protocols will say you've got to give them the space to do this and that, you've got to give them that, but they won't have many privileges because they can be here today and be gone tomorrow. So we need to look at all those things as a department, with other departments, not alone, because it's the police who have to take them from those remand centers to the court and back. And also we talk about what I spoke about to you yesterday. Today at the briefing of the JCPN. People are asking about these video arraignment services. It's a very simple thing. It's a video postponement thing. Because some of these awaiting trials are highly dangerous. So it's easy for the magistrate to sit in Pinetown, talk to Devon Westfield. Well, Devon Westfield is connected to Pinetown, connected to Devon, connected to about three or four courts. And then they can postpone those cases without the police taking them out so that there's no mishap in the process. So that is moving quite well, but not moving as fast as I want it to move. Because the more you keep them in our centers, the more they eat up our money. You've got to get them out so that all these three departments can come together then and do a contribution. The last thing I want Commissioner to talk about this, the issue of the efficiency. Somebody asked about the PPPs. I think our Commissioner was out. How efficient are they? How cost effective are they? Commissioner can talk about that. I'm not the accounting officer. But one thing I know, they do programs. They do rehabilitation programs. So I'm not sure also why you don't visit them as the select committee. You can visit them. Because those are state prisoners that are there. So you have a right to go in there without breaking any contract. You're not breaking any contractual obligation by going to check on that. In terms of rehabilitation, they are very efficient. I can never take anything away from them. They are quite efficient, the tools that we have. They are very good because they are built in such a way. It's because of the structure. Structure is much better than the structure that we have. You can't compare those things with Posmo. Posmo will be Ukrainsi compared to those. Because it's an old structure which is not conducive to rehabilitation. So there will be that big difference. It's like comparing Posmo with Malmesbury. You can't compare the two. Malmesbury would be much better than Posmo, or Goodwood would be much better than Posmo because of the way the structure was built. There are some of them in the pipeline. The five that Commission is talking about will be PPPs, not the Commission. It's Treasury regulation, Treasury option, and we agreed with Treasury on that. So there will be more of those that are coming. Only Kimberley is state at the moment, right? The others will be PPPs. And Treasury has asked us that we have agreed on that because we have fought over some period of time over what form to take, but we are over that now. We just want to get this thing going. But I must mention the issue of public works. We work together with public works, as Commissioner says, we have pushed from public works now. But really, the infrastructure thing is not easy. Because it cuts across years, first of all, it cuts across departments. And there are lots of other issues of escalation of costs and what have you. And as a seasoned executive member of the cabinet and ANC, I will sit here and point fingers at one government department, because we are one government. But there are delays that we experience. There are frustrations that we experience. When I called our commissioner just now, it was exactly on those frustrations that we are having on these infrastructural things, because by tomorrow, we've got to have this thing done. If it's not done by tomorrow, by next week, our name would be all over the newspapers for the wrong reasons. So I had to drag him out for 1 minute to deal with that quickly. So it's out of the way. So I just thought I should just mention those few things. The Karoo thing, we will talk, we always do about that. But seriously, the homework stuff that we keep on doing, I don't like. That we have to go back, come back again for another homework, come back again for something. I believe in one thing, you go through something prepared, hit what needs to be hit, convince those people about what you need to convince them about, walk away. Come next time with a new program. Not Umbeko Court. We'll come back. Because those who don't know his court will not know what Umbeko is. It's food that was left here. That was the night before. And in the morning, we've got to warm it up and eat it. We can't go on with Umbeko all the time. Thanks, Jefferson.
Thanks, Honorable Minister. We'll come back to some issues. If I can continue. Thanks for clarifying some of the things. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Minister. Honorable Chair, I want to say to the Minister that we have dealt with the issues of MATD before you came in much more comprehensively. But I didn't want to interrupt him because if it's said twice, it will be remembered.
Yes.
And I thought it's important enough for him to
say it in such a way that members of Parliament understand.
Yes. Thank you for that, Minister. And I think having said it twice will help. But in addition to the issues, the Minister has also asked me to expand on the issue of cost of PPPs, Chairperson, and I think it's quite an important matter to deal with. We've asked that some comparisons be done. It's extremely difficult when you want to compare cost of a PPP correctional center with one that's being run by government. The reason being, firstly, the issue of overcrowding in state facilities. Obviously, when you have to do a comparison and you do it the cost per person, firstly, the issue of overcrowding makes it difficult. So you've got to exclude the possibilities of overcrowding. Secondly, you have to deal with the issue of facilities that's been built many years ago and the capital part of that facility is in the cost. And those comparisons are not always easy. And then also, when you look at the conditions that we set for private contractors, they're quite different to the conditions that we have for ourselves in terms of the rehabilitation outcomes and certain service levels, certain level standards that we want to have. However, what we have done was to ask the transaction advisor to do a comparison for us for the first time, when we with the Kimberley model, we have something that will become, that will be fairly, that we can compare with some of these PPPs. And they've done some comparison on the basis of existing cost and projected cost. I have that information in my office, and I can make that available to you, that analysis of the transaction advisor that makes that comparison. And basically, they provide evidence that the PPP prisons are more cost-effective and also more efficient than the state prisons. Now, of course, there are a number of assumptions that they've thrown into there, but I leave it to you to make that decision based on the information that they present. But I think one of the major things that determine the cost efficiency is this concept of time value of money. And I think it's quite important for us to know that if you have a contract where you pay off over a longer period of time, rather than putting a sum of money up front in order to build and complete something, it becomes cheaper for government that doesn't have access to these huge amounts that's required to develop such infrastructure. And then, of course, the difficulty in managing such infrastructure. I think we have to remind this House that when initially we were given the money to build 5 correctional centres according to the traditional procurement method, where public works go out on tender, and then we build and we operate it ourselves, the cost estimate that we gave, that we received per prison at that time was 350 million rand. When eventually we got back offers after we put out a tender and developed the specifications, put out a tender, when we eventually got back responses from the market, the price went up to 600 million for that, to build one facility. Remember, no, we only have 350 million on the budget. We said, how do we do this? While we were still struggling and negotiating with Treasury, and we asked the contractors, now if we continue with Kimberley, they came back and said, no, sorry, the price is now 800 million. Now, what we have found in the case of PPP, that the contractor can put up a facility in 2 years flat, from the time of negotiating to the time of completing. In the case of government, it takes years before we get to that stage. And the cost of building, the cost of steel, the cost of labor, all those things don't remain static. So these are the difficulties that we have to confront. And Treasury, in considering the recommendation of the transaction advisor, and I must stress here that the transaction advisor were independent specialists that have been contracted to look at the best way for us to get this and to finance this and to build it. And they came up with this recommendation. Ours was to interrogate their recommendation and to decide whether we will accept their recommendation. We've done so together with Treasury and together in concurrence with Public Works. It's been a very rigorous process before we made that decision. The simple issue is here, whether as a developing country we have the money needed. If we say at today's cost to build one facility costs 800 million rand, within 2 years' time we can accept it will be more than a billion rand. If we talk about 5 facilities, the question is, who wants to spend 5 billion rand to build infrastructure? Then we've not even started to put a staff in place. We're not even talking about the operations. Another issue is, you will notice that in the 2 PPPs that we have, we don't have staff accommodation there. The PPPs don't offer staff accommodation. In government, we have this historical arrangement that we have to put staff accommodation in. That drives up the cost. So all these factors will answer the question of why is it really that PPPs can be at a lower cost per capita than state operations. So that in brief, but it's a very technical discussion, and I don't think I will do justice in this question and answer session, but if need be, Chair, we really quite prepared to engage you on that issue. There were a range of other questions that I think we may not have responded to adequately. There was a question on vetting of officials, and we were asked if officials on every level is being vetted. Indeed, I can confirm that our intention, or rather the policy, is that all officials must be vetted. The problem that we have is that we've been dependent up to now on the National Intelligence Agency to do that vetting, and we all know the story of the lack of capacity and the slow slowness to which the National Intelligence Agency responds to this. But we've made some progress in the sense that Cabinet has agreed that certain departments can begin to establish their own vetting units, and that's the route that we are taking as DCS. Have our own vetting units work under the guidance of MIA and see that the process of vetting our officials, and that applies to officials on all levels, Chairperson. The other question around the vacancies of in internal audit, I've explained that yes, indeed, we are concerned about the outflow of internal auditors from our organization. It's an area where we can't take any risk. We've now appointed a new director internal audit. I have had engagements with her of how we not only retain but also compete with other state departments and industry. I've already explained that in the case of internal auditors, we will be paying their professional membership fee as one such strategy, and we've also said we would want to upgrade the salaries and the levels of internal auditors within our department. But more importantly, we've also found that once you have the auditors there, you don't often capacitate and support them. I have to report to this meeting that I've since decided that I need internal audit in compliance with the PFMA to report, PFMA to report to me directly, something which was not the case up to now. And I'm really going to take a very keen interest in the work of internal audit, because if they do their work properly, we should not be landing with all these auditor general queries. So that is an area that's receiving our attention. There were questions around expenditure on high expenditure on administration and why it is so high. I think, members, just to explain that we are, that the basis of on which we budget is kind of shifted. Where previously we tended to lump things under one program, we've now tried to spread it out between the different programs. So that's the first thing that explains the increase or the decrease in terms of amount, especially as it relates to compensation of employees. What I need to say is that the administration program is also the program that accommodates expenditure on at your head office level and your regional office level as well. And what often happens at the head office level is with all new funding that comes in, because it takes a while to distribute that funding, you tend to park lots of that funding at the head office level. And as you then begin to complete your planning, you subsequently wire the money to other programs. And this is the kind of thing that kind of gives us a skewed sense often of that administration component. We are saying that we need to allocate funds at an earlier stage where it should be reflected on the basis of the work that's being performed. And we're systematically getting there to get, in terms of the report that we've had earlier, the alignment process between our plans and our reporting and the integration and alignment between our plans and our budgeting processes. We're not there. I have to admit that that's an area where we're busy making some improvements on. But to assure you, Chairperson, we have recently established a new component in DCS, and we have appointed Ms. Schreiner to lead that component. It's a branch responsible for operations and management support, so that we can begin to focus more on the service delivery issues, improving our reporting, improving our evaluation, our balancing, the project management capability within our organization, and ultimately our accountability and reporting to this committee and other structures of Parliament. I may not have answered a specific question, but I hope that in terms of the administration program, why it is so high, I hope that is as clear. Okay. I think the questions around the MACD project, I hope the Minister by now has given enough further information on that, so I won't cut from that. I hope I've covered the others, and my colleagues can pick up where we have not, or you may want to come back to clarify. Thank you, Chair.
Any more responses?
Thank you, Chair. I mentioned about the 293 ATDs who are 24 months and longer. The longest of awaiting trial in the Western Cape is from 2001. 15 June admitted. The second longest, 6 July 2001. These are two males, and the female, the longest since 2002. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, thank you very much, Commissioner Smolte. Any other response?
There was a question, Chairperson, on the facilities for vulnerable groups, and I think it's maybe Mr. Merck who asked that question. Have you responded to that? Do you want to? Thank you, Commissioner and Chairperson. I just want to add, as Commissioner indicated, in terms of the offenders with disability, the challenge is still to have a national policy. But currently, Chair, I can mention that at the regional level, there is a post that we call special categories, where we have a person who is attending to the elderly people, those with disability, as well as, you know, the women. We don't have a problem at the new generation institutions for ramps, etc., for people on wheelchairs. But we know that we still have, from our old structures, that you cannot easily change and amend to be friendly for the disabled people. But we have internal arrangements. For example, if a person do have a specific disability, we incarcerate them separately. And if it is medical related, we also incarcerate them in hospitals, not to have the situation where the Honorable Mr. Mack was saying he will really, you know, fight for his life. But we have special arrangements for those. I know it's not, we don't have the figures as such, but the figures and the details of those who do have the disabilities is available in the office. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair. Want to come in, anyone? We are done this time. Let us come in, just to clarify our question, Honorable Sokon.
Yeah, thank you, Sir Persin. I said that that commune regime is of intervention. The question was asked. The question to the issue of administration was asked in relation to the core function of the department, which in my naive, mind, would think that it would get a fair share of the allocation. I'm looking here on page 8, for instance. Administration is 2.6 billion. Correction. I don't know whether it's related. I suppose it's related to core function. It's 731 million. Development, 365. Social integration, 324. Care, 1.4. All of them together. They don't, what you call it, they are still less than the administration. And then, that question was raised in relation to that. That's why I said that the question was not really what you call it, what purpose the commissioner was responding to.
Yes, I think that they will know that. So what you are saying, Mr. Sokol, it means that the administration is bloated, because this bloated the officials there, where the core function is less funded. Can I recognize Dr. Van Herden?
Chairperson, again, apology for being late. It's difficult to be on your own, and thank you a lot of things. But be that as it may, Actually, my question arises from what Commissioner Smallberger has said, but it's a general question, actually. Why, what is the Correctional Services Department doing to assist these trial awaiting prisoners 6 and 7 years, going in for 7 and 6 years, respectively? The general, it's a justice matter, I think, to a large extent, but they need, surely justice needs to be assisted or alerted by Correctional Services. This is a bad situation. Some time ago, I did a criminal appeal in the appeal division in Bloemfontein, and the judge was furious because that person took 6 years before his appeal was heard, and he was successful in his appeal. So, be that as it may, what is Correctional Services doing to assist people who are so long trial awaiting to have their cases heard before a proper court? Thank you, Chief.
Thank you very much. I think we are just about to round off. Maybe to say that thing again of that man at the brand play. Maybe what I would need the people. No, Paul Bear is not here. Let me wait for this one until he comes back. I'll go to the other one. Yeah, and the other question I wanted to put, it's not a corner now, you must hear this. No, what I want to get from the department, I thought the Honorable Mac will come here again, but today he decided not to raise it. This committee is busy dealing with the sexual offences. A very sensitive bill that as a committee, when we are dealing with that bill, sometimes we forget to go for lunch. There's a lot there. In that video, you're aware, we're trying to know that our women, our children, who are vulnerable, are not, their rights are violated by some of these lunatics. Now, there's a clause that says, if, for example, I am convicted for committing such sexual offense, let's say I was a teacher, or I was a pastor, I am teaching in a Sunday school, and or I am a caregiver in a particular environment where there are kids and stuff. So, now, if I'm convicted, now I a client, I'm in the DCF center, you spend money because you have invested so much into this program of rehabilitating people who are in your center. You rehabilitate this person to a point where you are also satisfied that this person is so good. When we visit your center, they are the ones at times who are singing for us, or who are cooking for us, who are doing, some of them will entertain us by those inmates in that place, venue, where they are having this band there. I dance until I get home, you know, all the muscles were now, I couldn't move, you know, because they are so good. You are satisfied, no, this person, he is damn good now, they are fine. Some of them are even preaching in those cells now, to try and assist the those other inmates, to repent. They are saying, the Justice Department is saying, if that person, maybe, yeah, if the, what do you call this term? See the what? Yeah. Those ones are not them. They are saying, if that person is released, in terms of that clause, that person cannot be employed in any way. So either be a teacher or to go back to a Sunday school and teach our kids again, after you have rehabilitated this person. Now, this member for fighting your cause, in that meeting, saying now, what is the use of us encouraging the Department of Correctional Services to rehabilitate people
at the same time, justice when we are saying these people cannot be employed again. Now, why can't we simply drop this program of rehabilitation? Because it is not helping our people. You know? That was the fight we had on your behalf. You're not there. You know? But we'll send you anyway. Now, but I want to get your view on that one. Because we are sitting on Tuesday about the same bill. And we are finalizing it on Tuesday. But we are glued to our view that we can't say that. We can't say that. But why are we saying that? Because this person is in the driving station. Of course, there are those who have reached a ceiling, you can't rehabilitate them, we understand. And those for that name that you have called them, we understand. But there are those there. You can see someone, Honorable Ntuli is not here, he even said, what about those who were framed? Because the cover says that, no, this person was framed. Then, even though he has served the sentence already, what I'm saying about those? Now, let's get your opinion on this one to say, can we also agree with the department to say this person, even if you have been rehabilitated, is not employable? Full stop. That loss will remain there, and then you will remain in the register as well. This person is not employed anywhere in our government. Unless if you are employed at a farm somewhere where you're in the discharge, you're just working there as a mafuguza. Yeah, mafuguza is just trying to go to that city. We'll have to hear your view on that one. But I'm happy Mogera is here now. What we want to say, we are not saying the department must close their eyes and just employ that person there or do whatever. We will need to just the regional commissioner to attend to this thing, because you must get exactly what is the problem. Because surprisingly, even the officials who are in that institution at Jabran State, they're saying, we've tried our best as well, but they're not getting as well from the head office. So that this person is running to us. The very same officials who are there, all of them are saying, we've tried our best, we've given up. I don't know what it is that they want. I don't think it's a promotion, but there's something that they're complaining about, saying, no, this person is not. The fact that he is no more allocated to do what he was doing, they want to shift him from what he was doing to something else. Can we request to get a report on that one to address what is it? What is this obstacle? Because I thought this man-made obstacle that will prevent this man continuing doing what he was doing there. I don't think he was fighting for a promotion. It was something else. If you can just request that to get a report on that one. The second one is the, if I can, before we discuss tomorrow, to get this, I know that the report is ready, about the longer serving ATDs in respective regions, if you can get that there. To have them in, because I know the records are there. Have the list of them, and when were they in your centers, and stuff, their names and stuff, and all the data, what is there. Because the purpose of this was to assist you, if maybe you don't understand this. The purpose is to assist you because you want to consult the Justice Department. Because it's not your baby that you must really look after these people for so long, while the people who are supposed to handle it, as Honorable Panyatian say, want to assist you because want to confront this department, Justice. So what I'm doing in this region, in this center, here are the people who have been there since 2001. It's not fair. When I say some of them, maybe it's because of investigation stuff, but we must know exactly why this delay. You don't deserve to spend so much of people who belong to justice and to the police. Like now, we're condemning that you are spending cents and whatever, and you're spending for something that you're not supposed to spend. To us, it's not on.
So I request that before end of the day tomorrow, if you can get a set of these people who are in your centers, the longest serving one, from 2 years upward. So if you can get them, then we'll be happy. And even I want to assess the breakdown of the set of people who are suspended in your respective regions, and to check how much are spending for those people there. I want to set those breakdowns so that we have it as it comes. Yeah, as I said by my colleague there, and how long have they been suspended? Yeah, colleagues, will assist me if I'm giving up something. Oh, there's one other thing that I wanted to check in. Who transported these ATDs every day to their, and what's it called? Is it police? Or they come and take them from the center? Oh, that's good. Oh, wonderful. Wonderful. Because I don't want you to be sued for something that does not belong to you. We love this department. the advocate is saying no. I love women.
I'm saying definitely love to be loved. We love you too.
Oh, thanks very much. Yeah, I take two to tango. It's true. Colleagues, is there anything, because this is the last round, I want us to close this thing. Is there any other question to ask before to release the department? This was not a grilling, you know. I think it was a nice interaction, you know. No. Don't do it now. Okay.
Very short. You know, the response that you gave, the department that you have, I think that is doing a lot of good work. But also, in terms of some of the issues that was the commissioner was commenting about, in terms of the infrastructure, the time it takes and what, I think that we appreciate that. However, there's also something called chairperson planning. This medium-term expenditure framework, the cycle of budgeting, gives people opportunity to do that. But he was saying that as well, maybe we need more time to engage. I'm sure I'll end up loving this department and be part of this engagement, because I think that there's a lot to engage about. That's why I was saying I need to comment about that.
Thank you. Yeah, one other thing, on the outsourcing of that service, if I can get how much I'm paying those private entities, if I can have that in writing, as to know how much I'm paying them. I want to compare with other departments that we, but I'm taking your reasons for it, but I just want to satisfy myself about the reason that you're giving this comment. Honorable Mac.
Thank you, Chin. This is rounding up, Chin. And I don't think I'll need an immediate answer. But I must first also thank and congratulate the department chairperson. You know, when they built a house in Cape Town, the inmates built, it was all over TV and everything. And I think that was a very good thing. But, and on that, we always say we need community participation. But I think we should also look at inmate participation within the community. And that is how I see this housing project, this house that was built and was handed over. And it presented a good image of this department. And I think that is more the type of strategy that I want to see. Maybe not only in house building, maybe in other community projects where inmates can be used a turnaround strategy of having people coming to facilities or to correctional centers and more taking them out. This is only a comment, because that is the way I think we should think in the future. And I'm also pleased to hear of the strategy of strengthening maybe the fence around the facility for the ATP awaiting trial detainees. And that is the type of thing that I'm thinking about. But I must congratulate them on that good work, especially in Cape Town and in the Western Cape. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. There are very few questions that I'm going to respond to, but I think I'm understand what you're saying. I'm not going to make it. That's it. For example, now there's a new trend by the department. For whatever function that is taking place in whatever region, they're inviting us as a committee. Just as when they invite us for business, some other work as a committee, but they're inviting us. That's a very good thing, Commissioner. Thank you very much for that. We appreciate it. I remember you invited us for a function at Mpumalanga, ABJ in Cape Town. And, we appreciate it. We appreciate it. I can tell you that these members, if you invite us, even though we're not going to come, we're going to make a noise about it. But thanks very much. You are really there's a positive move by the department today. On that note, can I allow the department to respond to those few questions? Then we'll just finish and then I'll tell you what I want to do. Commissioner, over to you.
There are some questions directed to Mr. Smallberg. I'm sure he will pick up on that. The issue of the sexual offences bill, if I may want to start there, Chairperson. We don't have necessarily a departmental view, except to say that research does show that the prognosis for certain categories, the prognosis for rehabilitation in respect of certain categories of offenders, particularly sexual offenders, are extremely poor. In other words, the possibility for them to reoffend is extremely high. And this applies also largely to those who have committed crimes against children in particular. So when the Justice Department says that because of such poor prognosis, and once they have served their sentences, despite efforts to rehabilitate, they must make sure that they never ever work with children in order for that trigger, or the possibility of substance abuse. As a professional, I can just concur, and my engagement also, I've recently had some discussions with other jurisdictions where they also, in New Zealand, for example, they do not invest much resources in certain categories of sexual offenders. So that is really the issue. And I think from a professional point of view, I understand where the Department of Justice is coming from. I think we have to, we can never lose faith in humanity. And that is why we will continue to give people a second chance. But I want to say that our research in this area in South Africa is still not good enough for us to take certain risks. And when it comes to the protection of our children, I would much rather say that it's on the side of caution. I think if the intention is for them never to work again or only to work on farms, I can't support that. But if the intention is to prohibit them from working with children, then I fully support that professionally. The issue of related to that, we are saying that it may be that some of them may have been framed. I mean, if we accept that some of them have gone through the judicial process and exhausted the appeal processes, that's the best that we have in place, and therefore even that is not a risk. The risk of them having been framed is not a risk that we can transfer to children. I acknowledge the comment made by Honourable Sihoni on the issue of poor planning. I think I've tried to say that up to now we've really not done justice to our responsibility to plan these projects effectively. And I've tried to say that apart from having the settlers in place, the establishment of operations component with a very strong focus on project management and proper planning and scheduling of funds is something that we need to get better on. And that's what we are doing to try and turn that around. To come back to the point on administrating costs, just two issues there. I would have liked you to rather group all the expenditures for all the other programs and then make a comparison between that and administration. But since you're not going to do so, I'm going to concur with you that we must always remain vigilant when it comes to input versus output, what we put in for what we get out, and therefore make sure that we do put resources that will make the greatest impact on the in the area of service delivery. What I can assure you is that we constantly interrogating this. One of the projects that we're currently busy with, Chair, is a project that we call the alignment of our structure and our function. And essentially one of the key terms of reference there is to say, can we shift our resources from head office to the level where delivery takes place? So that we begin to reflect our resolve to strengthen our implementation as DCAs. And I want to say to you quite clearly, the Minister has given the instruction that we should make sure that now that we have moved beyond the development of policies and white papers, let's focus on implementation and let's make sure that our resources also begin to reflect that. So in as much as that will happen and it may impact on the administrative costs, that's what our intention is, and we hope early next year to implement the recommendations that's busy being refined in that regard. I think we've noted the request for further information, and we will respond to that, Chair. We have noted that. Maybe I should ask Mr. Smallberger to respond to Dr. van Heerden's question, and other regional commissioners can also respond. The question is, what is it that we as DCS is doing, or what we are doing to intervene in cases of people awaiting trial for long periods of time through our interaction with justice on these individual cases specifically? And maybe whilst you are thinking, just to say that for us, it's really not in our interest, but I think we also need to look at the cause of justice. I mean, clearly, if you stay in a waiting trial detainee for 6 years, what would happen to witnesses? What is happening to the likelihood of that case being prosecuted successfully? So we share your concern. But more recently, we have been practically engaging with the National Prosecuting Authority to utilize the pre-bargaining mechanism and for us to initiate that. I know there's a project in Boxburg where we're beginning to make some interesting gains where the numbers of cases where pre-bargaining is considered is going up. That require, and obviously certain categories of cases, but those are some of the mechanisms. But maybe the regional commissioners could just comment on some specific action as well. Mr. Smallberger.
Thank you, Commissioner Chairperson. Unfortunately, I missed that question maybe just whilst I was just out. It is true, if I understand the question correctly, that correctional services cannot do that much because we are just a holding facility, but we are playing a role in, as Commissioner was saying, that we have also court officials at the court, to assist the process and to facilitate between the correctional center as well as the court. Because it happens on a daily basis that people are summoned to court, and those officials are playing that role not to waste time, because sometimes it happens that the attorney or the advocate is requesting offender to appear in court, so he's playing that facilitating role to assist, not to frustrate processes. But our role is also to make sure that those who are there, that we are having more information, also not only for that role, but also for the security role, because I was also listening that
You know, there was also a proposal for separate facilities for ATDs, because they are not already maximums, but a large number of those ATDs will be tomorrow, the maximum category. So what we are doing, we are treating ATD offenders as maximums because you don't have information. Let me cite an example. If we admit an ATD or a waiting for a detainee, we admit that person with a J7 warrant, and the only information on that warrant is basically just the personal particulars, nothing more. Now, the fact that we are engaging the cluster is also to get more information, to know who we are dealing with, not to be surprised, and also determine the level of security that needs to be applied to those offenders, because surely, like these two examples which are incarcerated from 2001, the crimes against them is for those two, rape, robbery, and murder. So obviously their cases are not straightforward, and those cases are running in the High Court. So Chair, it is true there's not much in terms to speed up the case, but also to assist correctional services to have that information to adjust our security arrangements for those specific individuals. Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson, then we both have asked through our parliamentary liaison office to consolidate the responses as required in my own office. But, Chair, as I know you're wrapping up, please also allow me the opportunity to thank the honourable members and yourself for the way of engaging. I know that it's a strange phenomenon for parliamentarians to engage in this manner, but I think sometimes when one becomes adversarial, we're not getting the best out of officials, and sometimes the approach of being less adversarial should also help to get the most information. So I'm not saying I expect you to treat us like this all the time when we come before you, but sometimes, especially when it comes to our annual report, it does help to also begin to allow space to get into the detail. And so I really appreciate that, and I'm not saying that we will take what you have said lightly. It doesn't mean that. I think the questions have been quite penetrating, and you may have done so with love. And in some cases, we've not responded sufficiently to you. But, Chair, thank you very much for the opportunity, and it's really good to work with this committee as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'll request Honorable Manyosi to thank the department on our behalf. Mr. Nekas.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think the information that we have been fed with in terms of this report is adequate and answers certain questions that have always been around when we go to visit correctional centers, and the efforts that are being made by the department are to us very commendable. Never mind the fact that at some stage the minister tried to say, why don't you have this information? I think the information that you have given us is adequate, and it arms us and it allows us to be able to check on what is outstanding in terms of whatever deficiencies are there in terms of assisting to some extent on the questions of overcrowding and on the questions of people staying in detention for a long time. I think in terms of our recommendations, we will be able to make an effort to assist to the extent that we can with the information that you have given us, which I say to me, and I think to most of us, has been adequate, has been efficient, has been, to a large extent, sufficient. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Manus. Let's not spoil it. Well said. On that note, is to wish the Commissioner and your team well continue your endeavor in making sure that, as always, this department shines from all other departments. To wish those who will be leaving tomorrow, because there are no more flights now. I don't think any person must fly to Lingam. I have back here. Having the advocate and Commissioner Nsego. Yeah, thank you very much. Until we meet again, we are busy with your bill, hopefully, and we are going to pass this bill soon. And also change some of the old names that we are still used to, some of them. Before I attend the meeting, just a reminder to my colleagues that our meeting tomorrow starts at 9. We'll be dealing with the interception bill and the sexual offences, again, I'm told. Minimum sentencing. Those two bills. But I'll make sure that we finish before 12. So that members are able to connect their flights, those who are living outside Cape Town. Colleagues, thank you very much. With your permission, can I adjourn this meeting? Do you allow me? The meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.
This number, this is my son, I'm going to change it.